Blog Talk Radio.
Just
say, you can call me Buddy Coleman.
A lot of people asked, Doc, the intro, who is it? Can we listen to it in entirety? Next Sunday, Paul Hammond, Call Me Righteous. And we righteously always start Sports and Death off with a prayer. John Coltrane is the instrumentalist who leads us with his Dear Lord that takes us into the Sports and Death Nation. Today, I have things to talk about. Really love the music. If you ask, well, Doc, who's that? Cool and Again. Summer Madness. As we look back to summer, madly, has flown by. I think it's the greatest piece of instrumental work they've ever done, and one of the greatest pieces of instrumental work anybody's ever done. A great classic piece of music. Derek Jeter, 6 now on all-time hit list. Passing Hannes Wagner. And now, Derek Sanders and Jeter. Where's number 2 as his apropos? Because he's sicker than none as a player or person. Everything that Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be and everything Mickey Mantle was, a real live American hero. Derek Sanders and Jeter. Accomplished some feats they never did. 3,000 hits, the most hits ever by a Yankee, the most hits ever by a right-handed batter in the American League. And with the exception of Hank Aaron, the most hits by a right-handed batter, period. 20 years at shortstop. The Major Derek Jeter is his turn 2 foundation. I remember his first year in the league, and we were up in Harlem that November Thanksgiving, and there he was. And I was there with the greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, Larry Hardesty. ESPN's Jackie Robinson, the man who introduced this show, which he will soon do. And with John Starks, who threw down the greatest dunk in New York Knicks, in New York City basketball history. And there was Eric, the rookie, first year in, nurtured by his mother and his father, giving back, following his idol, Dave Winfield. He wanted to be like Dave. And the Turn 2 Foundation is a facsimile of the foundation that Dave Winfield had. Eric Jeter. Hall of Famer in the game of life way before he will be 5 years from his retirement from baseball in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Rory McIlroy wins again. Not just Tiger Woods. Has anybody won back-to-back majors? Venus Williams finally beat a sister yesterday. They played 25 times. Now the score is 14-11 Serena. They played on 10 different countries. With that, John Coltrane will lead us into prayer as Sports and Death is back at Block Talk Radio. When the Trust and Guardian of the Giants won yesterday their second preseason win, second preseason game played at MetLife Stadium in a week, and the second time victory has come to a New York team on that field. The guru of NFL football at home. This is my series. The NFL forum will join us. But right now, as you take your hats off, get on your knees. Close your eyes. Put your hands together. Time to pay homage to the one and only true God. John Coltrane, Miles Davis' dear friend, and so much Williams reminds me of John Coltrane. He is my Coltrane. Miles Davis, this love, respect, and dependence so much on Coltrane that he said Coltrane was like having 2 saxophones in the band. He understood why Coltrane had to leave. Be darn sure didn't like it. And now, Coltrane, lead this in, Dear Lord, and we'll pay homage to our Lord and Savior. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you, Lord, for little things we so largely take for granted. And we never want to take your goodness and mercy for granted. Mercy and grace. Mercy is not getting what you do deserve, and grace is getting what you don't deserve. Let your word be our way. Bless our families here in the panel, our families across the nation, our families in Brazil, Panama, DR, and across the world. More importantly, Lord, We just want to thank you for being our God, the one and only true God. And we ask these blessings, all the blessings, in your darling Son, and our Lord and Savior. In Jesus' name, the Lord. In Emmanuel's name, your Son's name. Say, amen.
I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. You're listening to Sports In Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley. Before him there was none, after him there shall be no more. You have the man that takes you inside what goes on in the world of sports. He's in the dugout. He's in the clubhouse. He's right by the water cooler. He is everywhere you need him to be to let you know what's going on. And also you listen to the movers and shakers in the world of sports. You are found the right place with the legendary Doc Stanley on Sports In Depth.
And if I may say that the Sports In-Depth Nation is here. The Sports In-Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I am here. We're here courtesy of the Trust in God Radio Network. And the straw that serves the drink is indeed here, and that's the incomparable Doc Stanley. Take it away, good Doc.
You get kind of humbled. Well, you got to be humble when you get those kind of intros. You have no idea what it means coming from the likes of Larry Hardesty, the greatest African-American sportscaster in the history of New York City Radio, which means he's the greatest of all time. The Jackie Robinson of ESPN Radio. And it was Larry Hardesty that begotten the name of me, Doc Stanley. I remember seeing Larry for the very first time, and heard him for years, of course. He was in the press room, and he had the only person I ever seen with pleated black corduroy pants, and always my Bill Cosby an outstanding sweater. And I walked over, I said, hi, Larry. He says, I know who you are. You're Doc Stanley. And it was at that moment I became Doc Stanley. That moment, that was the moniker, that was the prefix that was injected on me throughout the entire sports world. We talked about Derek Jeter, and I remember a salutation and something that Derek had said about me. A gentleman approached Derek at a wedding. And my buddy Julio Rodriguez, one of the greatest comedians of all time, and he had told this gentleman that his friend Doc Stanley was Derek Jeter. And, of course, the gentleman, not believing Julio, he approached the DJ. He, matter of fact, the other wedding, said, hey, do you know Doc Stanley? And Julio said that Derek turned to the gentleman and said, yeah, he says, everybody knows Doc Stanley. You can't buy those kind of things, you know. You can't buy those kind of things from those kinds of people. And then in memory, we open up always. The legendary Mel Fulfell, a.k.a. Lococo, a.k.a. Rooney. We will miss him forever. He will ever be a part of Sports In Depth. Doc Stanley, Sports In Depth, Blog Talk Radio, and Custom Driver Network. And now, let's go to the panel. We've got Jim Shot Jonesy, and we've got Mr. Nail 411, Roy McIlroy wins again. Third straight tournament win. There's no doubt he's the number one golfer in the world. And not since Tiger Woods has anybody won back-to-back majors. Roy lost the lead, got the lead back, eagled. That turned out to be the difference as a bogey by Phil Mickelson left him just one behind. Mickelson, though, you had to take your hat off to him. He's played well. He paired off with Tiger and got himself together. It was two under after the first round. Tiger was three over. And then talking the other day with our esteemed guest, It seems that Tiger Woods is either at one time physically ready and not mentally ready, another time mentally ready and not physically ready. And until he gets both back on the same page, we won't see the old Tiger, it seems. It's unbelievable. It's 2006 is the last time Tiger Woods won a major. And in 2006, when he won his last major, and I remember he had lost at the PGA, which everybody thought was going to be his 15th. But, I mean, 2000, that's 8 years. I mean, you figure Tiger was going to win out of majors. So he's been out so some injuries. But out of eight years, 32 majors. Right? Okay? 8 years, 32 majors. Somewhere on the line, you figure Tiger was going to get six, seven of them. He'd have passed Nicholson by now. But that's another story. But we've got some basketball. We've got the jump shot. We've got the NFL. Last night, Giants win their second preseason game at MetLife Stadium, beat the Pittsburgh Steelers, come from behind and do it. They are looking good. They won the NFL game, Wings. They won last night. It's preseason, but you better be 2-0 than 0-2. Anything you see differently this year at this point of the preseason that you didn't see last year?
I mean, one, Manning, you're going to have to look at him and see how he's going to play in the regular season. As we say, it's preseason right now. We want to see how Ben McAdoo is going to showcase his offense, because it was just so many offensive problems last year with Eli leading the NFL with I think it was 27 interceptions for the season, uncharacteristically of Eli Manning. But it's still questionable for the offense. The running game is not bad. As you've seen how they ran the ball against Buffalo, you saw how they ran yesterday against a team like the Steelers. It's the passing game that's going to be scrutinized, and that's what you're going to have to look for to see how Eli Manning with the new acquisitions and the new offensive line with Chris Snee and a lot of these guys retiring, so many different changes. You're going to have to see. They have a pretty tough schedule coming up in the regular season on who they'll have to play. Nothing as bad as it has been the past couple of years, but they play some heavy-duty teams. They're going to have to play Seattle. That's one of the bigger teams they'll have to play, and obviously in their division, which I still think at this point the Washington Redskins are going to win the division.
With Jackson, the acquisition of some defensive players and a healthy RG3, I mean, they've got to be the pick of the litter, definitely in the running. You're always suspect of the Dallas Cowboys because of the guy that they have, a quarterback who's an outstanding quarterback. Tremendous point you bring up once again. How is Manning and offense going to do? Hakeem Nicks is gone, but Hakeem stayed so often injured that he couldn't be a factor. And if you had him on one side and Cruz on the other, wow, how things would have been. And nobody's talking about Brandon Jacobs, the all-time leading scorer of touchdowns in Giants history. He's gone. It'd been nice if he could hung around another year. We could have added that he turned out to be the best running back they had last year. Number 27, I was at the game. I saw somebody win that number yesterday. We're looking at that division too, the Eagles. I mean, you got to wonder how good of a team can they be if Mark Sanchez is their backup quarterback. There's no knock on Mark. And then again, it is a knock on Mark. I mean, I don't understand the situation there. You had Vic, and you had the other fellow who suddenly supplanted him. But, I mean, there's questions on the ability of Mark. There was a thing in the paper today that said that the reason why Rex Ryan had put Mark in that game last year against the Giants was that at that point, the quarterback position job was still up for grabs, and he wanted to see Mark. To see what Mark could do, and you know, Wings. The consensus was that Mark had the job. I mean, you were putting your number one quarterback in, and the consensus was that Mark was going to be the starting quarterback. Geno was going to be the guy coming up the bench. Geno was going to be the guy learning from Mark. But now, according to what I read, is that Coach, your buddy, wasn't sold on Mark being the starter. The job was still up for grabs, and that's why he put Mark in the game. Your thoughts on that? And you too there, Jump Shot. Your thoughts to Mr. NFL 411?
I think that was definitely a poor that was a poor choice by Rex Ryan. Excellent defensive mind, good coach in my opinion, but I think a terrible, terrible mistake on putting your starting quarterback. I mean, I just didn't see, you know, we did the training camp a couple of days last year. I just didn't see Geno Smith at that point taking the job from Mark Sanchez, even with the bad pass that Mark Sanchez had over the previous years prior. The first 2 years prior to Geno Smith coming there, I just didn't see the necessity of putting either him or Geno Smith in there at that point. You don't want to put your starting quarterback or the guy that you guys want to be the future or someone that can legitimately stand behind your starting quarterback. You don't want to get them hurt. Because in the fourth game, they're putting a lot of guys out there, really the third and fourth stringers. A lot of the guys are not going to be there because after that game, you're going to see the serious cuts prior to the season. So I just didn't understand that logic of putting them in there, the risk of getting them hurt, which that risk came around to be true. It just didn't make any sense at that point. But it looks like Mark Sanchez didn't play too bad in Philadelphia, haven't thrown a lot of interceptions. He is playing against the second stringers, but he seems confident. But I think it was also a change that Mark Sanchez needed, just not under those circumstances of being hurt. But I think he's going to do pretty well in Philadelphia. He needs to change. But before we go on, Doc, if I could just sidetrack real quick. Former Giants defensive tackle Linval Joseph was shot over the weekend in Minnesota nightclub. He was hit by a stray bullet in the ankle. He was treated and released and expected to return back to training camp, so that's good good news there. He was drafted 46 overall in the 2010 draft by the New York Giants. Just wish him a speedy recovery. He had just signed a $31.5 million contract for 5 years this past March with the Vikings. So we wish him a full and speedy recovery. And also wide receiver Martellus Bennett, who was, I think, wrongly suspended by the upper management, the general manager of the Chicago Bears, for allegedly throwing one of the players down, a defending player as a cornerback down to the ground, which I looked at the video. I didn't see him throw the guy down to the ground. And you want those type of actions during training camp because, you know, this is what you're going to deal with out there in the trenches when the season starts. You don't want a guy that's passive. You're going to see fights. You're going to see guys push and shove. As long as it doesn't get so extreme, I just didn't understand that suspension there.
Yeah, I want to jump in also. I agree with your assessment regarding Mark Sanchez yesterday. I know we're, you know, talking about the Giants. But I think, you know, Rex Ryan last year made something that many of us, all of us have made in our life, and it's called a mistake. And, you know, at that time, apparently, he had not decided on who his number one quarterback was, because certainly if it was Mark Sanchez, then there would be no reason to have him in the game and risk him at that point in the game in a meaningless game. It was the third game of the season. So he made a mistake, and unfortunately it cost Mark Sanchez. But by the same token, it opened up, it gave Geno Smith, you know, an opportunity to kind of come in and kind of feel his way through in his rookie season. The Giants, what I saw yesterday, guys, I mean, I'm happy about, you know, that they were able to, you know, make some plays and get the, you know, get the victory. But I think right now, as you said, they're in a tough division, and losing David Wilson Justin Tuck, Brandon Jacobs, and guys who are kind of like the heart and soul of the team. You know, I mean, I know Eli is still there. You know, their schedule and how they navigate through their schedule, especially the first 4 or 5 weeks, is really going to be a telling point, you know, regarding their season. When they got to play Washington twice, they got to play Dallas twice, they got to play the Eagles twice, and the Eagles, you know, I know we've been talking about Mark Sanchez, but the key guy there, and it's not even Foles so much, although he had a very good year last year when he came in and took over for Michael Vick. The key guy there, two key guys, rather. One is certainly LeSean McCoy.
Of
the
course.
Other one is going to be Sproles. This guy, Sproles, I wish the Giants could have gotten away from New Orleans. He is going to be – he is a game – breaker
Dallas
and a
Sproles,
game maker,
yeah.
Dallas Sproles. And he's now in the division. So him and another guy who's not really talked about in the division, and I'm talking about guys who can bang out 4 to 5 yards per carry, is this guy down in Washington, Alfred Morris, who I know the big talk was RG3 his rookie year, but Alfred Morris ran for 1,400 yards, and that certainly helped RG3 in his rookie season. And these are the two of the best running backs in the division. Right now in the backfield, without that, you're going to have Eli. You got to keep Eli upright, and he's going to have to be throwing the ball 30, 35, 40 times a game to stay competitive. And I don't know if the Giants now have the offensive line to do that, to keep this guy upright, throwing 40 times. He last year, interception-wise, was one of Eli Manning's worst seasons, interception-wise,
yeah,
turnover-wise.
Right.
They don't have,
right.
Hold on, they don't have right now, currently as currently constituted, turnovers. The Giants don't have that kind of offense where they can bear turnovers.
Yeah. I think Eli, he's the kind of guy that's not going to make excuses. He was 100%. Jerry Reese even talked about the fact that he wasn't 100%, and he's looking forward to see what he can do this year. I think the Giants, one, really wouldn't have a problem with Eli throwing the ball a lot like that as long as they're winning. The question I was going to present to you and to Z-Wings is, and you mentioned some names there, Tuck, Jacobs.
Don't forget Chris Snee.
He's hot guy. Doc, he retired. I'm Snee.
I'm just talking about it seemed with the retirement, they just sort of, even though it was just last year, faded away. I know, well, Brandon told me the injuries had got to the point that he couldn't play anymore. But it's just amazing that nobody's talking about what they meant, not only as players, but guys who were, and I'm not saying locker room-wise, but guys who could help other people, guys who were great examples. I'm just looking around, and I don't know what's happening in the ensuing weeks, but I would think a guy like Jacobs and Snee would have some sort of position in the organization. And I wonder how much of their sort of just exclusion is the fact that Myra was a very a guy that was very family orientated and thought so much of guys who had gave so much to the
and don't forget David Hill too. You lost a lot of guys. That's also a leader that was in the locker room with on the offensive side of ball, and then Justin Tuck. I mean, the guy was just awesome as a leader. I mean, you can have good players, but look at Michael Strahan. I think he was a big-time leader. That's why a lot of the guys flew out there because they knew he was going to retire and said, look, we could do this year. They needed him there. This guy was he was like the Derek Jeter of the defense. And the guys all look Strahan. Michael Strahan, congratulations to him on being inducted into the Hall of Fame last week.
Along with Andre Reed.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah, and I think he may, you know, I don't want to jinx them, but the Giants, they Eli Manning can go the way of Mark Sanchez did after his first 2 years, with the Jets being successful, and once a lot of the pieces were removed around them, some rightfully so, some through the cap and different things like that, you know, with all this new change around him, that could be the big kind detrimental to a quarterback like Eli Manning, even with the two Super Bowl wins under his belt.
Yeah.
You
know? I think what you're also finding now, absolutely, I agree.
Eli's kind of done beyond what expectations were. And then you're saying the deletion of the talent, you know, there was Nick's Manningham is back. He's back in the fold, one of the coaches, I believe. Looking at, trying to find my stats from last night's game, which I will give his rundown. The Giants trailed early in that game last night, 3-0 field goal, put the Steelers up. Giants came back with a touchdown, and then a field goal, took a halftime lead at 10-3. Giants added another field goal. Steelers got a field goal, and then, bam, turnover. And the next thing you know, the Steelers had the lead, but the Giants came back in the closing minutes, got another touchdown. 20-16 win, their second preseason win, second victory of the week at the MetLife Stadium. Because on Thursday, the Giants, rivals and roommates, so to speak, the Jets, had a 13-10 win, a 51-yard field goal kicked in the closing minutes of that game, and both
they
teams
have a problem,
are undefeated.
They have a problem. They have a lot of injuries. Ivory should be back. It's the corners that who you know, that was a questionable position coming into this year anyway. You know, their linebacker, their cornerback, Dexter McDougal, he's done. He's done for the season. He tore his ACL today, defending a pass thrown to Stephen Hill. Then you got Dee Milliner, the number one pick last year, at number 9 in the first round out of Alabama. He has a high ankle sprain. He had to be helped off the field. Dimitri Patterson is nursing a quad injury. So Dee Milliner is going to be out a couple of weeks. So that, you know, the depth at that position, that's who they picked on last year was Dee Milliner. Picked on him from Tom Brady to Joe Flacco. So the Jets are going to have a problem with these guys being out. I mean, there was questions going into this training camp anyway, having cut Antonio Cromartie, failing to sign his cousin, who ultimately went to the Giants. They didn't re-sign Revis. So, you know, that's going to be an issue going into the season here. We're going to have to see
With cornerbacks falling all over the place, it seems Doc Stanley Sports and Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. It's the Sunday Sports Wrap-Up and Cincinnati Seawings, a.k.a. Ms. NFL 401, Jump Shot Jonesy, and Double Bar Howard Wilson Jr. here. It seems a lot this refusal to bring Revis back seemed to be personal and bad blood. And in the case, you don't know how much of that is racial, too. But definitely a bad sign by the Jets. And now to turn around and have these injuries, and even bigger than that, was for Revis to go to the Patriots. I mean, one of the things you want to do, I remember back in the baseball days, the White Rat, Whitey Herzog, took a shortstop from another team so the Mets wouldn't get him, just so the Mets wouldn't have him on their team to be advantageous to them. Hey, okay, I know where he is. And you just would have thought the Jets, if anything, would have snatched Revis, and they could have sent Revis to Oakland, could have sent him to Chicago, could have sent him any place. I don't know how much of that is personal. The guy still made All-Pro last year after coming off the injury. He's considered the best defensive cornerback in the game. If not, still the best, at one time the best, and still one of the very best. So, as Howard's classic line, sad and touchy that they would allow pettiness.
I don't think they wanted him to pay him between the $10 and $13 million he was asking for.
Yeah, I heard that was one of the factors. I mean, he was looking for 12 to 14, but I definitely agree. If you can, you don't let him go to your rival if you can help it. And from the reports that I've gotten, that he did want to come back to New York. The Jets were his first choice. That's what I've been hearing. But because, as you said, the internal conflict that he probably had with him and the new general manager, a few other instances here, it's like sometimes you take a stand because this is a guy you don't want on your team, and then he goes to you don't let him go to the Red Sox. If this is the Yankees, you don't let him go to the Red Sox. George Steinbrenner will not let you go to the Red Sox. Now, if he's got to sign you and trade you, then that's something different. You know, and
but
so,
I think by him sitting out training camp the second time, I think more or less that relationship soured, and also you add that on what he was asking for in this day and age with the salary cap. I just think that's where baseball is starting to you see the watered down. I don't know if it's talent, but they wanted such a parity around the league there, and you see baseball suffering. Guys are not hitting the balls out of the parks like they used to. Instead of having maybe 15 or 16 good teams, now it's like one or two good teams in Major League Baseball. And you don't even see that in football anymore. You don't see the dominant teams that go back-to-back. Last team to go back-to-back in the NFL to the Super Bowl was the Buffalo Bills, four in a row. That long and never won anything. You haven't seen a team do that since. I think they're the only team, really, that in the modern era.
They're the only team ever. Modern era, any era that ever went to the championship game four consecutive years. It's Andre Reed, Doc Stanley's posted at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network as a Sunday sports wrap up. Andre Reed talked about, as you know, Jim Kelly, and once again, alluding to my Trust in God Sports and Death Entertainment Artifacts Museum, we've got a Jim's autograph on my illustrious football bag. But I remember as an announcer, they had a big affair, and it got a nice shot of me and Jim as announcers. And Andre Reed talked about what a big inspiration he was. He was a leader of the Buffalo Bills, what a great player he was. And how they all were family. And Kelly is having some issues, some cancer problems. And the Buffalo Bills, Bruce Smith, all-time sack lead in the history of NFL football. And, yes, by the grace of God, because all great and wonderful things come from him. We have two pair of autographs for game one, game used, game performed in spikes by the great Bruce Smith, who's a tremendous boxing guy, both boxing. And as we both call Banks and Bill Parcells, and yes, we have Banks shoes and gloves here too. I just looked at that whole situation with Revis, and it reminded me somewhat too. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in Milwaukee, and he told Milwaukee he wanted to go to New York, and New York didn't want him. And he was what? He said, okay, go to L.A. But Kareem emphatically later let it be known it wasn't New York or L.A. It was New York. When New York didn't want him, then he went to L.A. And I think sometimes we forget some of the personal racial mindsets in New York. I mean, we are jumping to hoops a little bit for the first time having a starting black quarterback in New York City. It's the 21st century. It's the 21st century. First starting black quarterback in New York City history. It's the 21st century. You mean nobody's been qualified before? I don't think so. But these are the things you look at. Now we got two. We got Vic. We got Geno. But I remember Jeff Blake was the quarterback for the Jets. He couldn't get a backup role. Blake had the lead, wanted to become the starting quarterback of Cincinnati. And I know me and Jeff became buddies, and he was very helpful in my obtaining the we have an autograph in here, jersey by the great John Elway. And that's a whole other story in itself. And somebody says I got to put that in the book. But a lot of these things, I know we just can't forget. I mean,
I think this is the first time, Doc.
three black quarterbacks on the team. Don't forget the Taj Boyd that was drafted out of Clemson this year. So you got three black quarterbacks on the same team.
I'm just talking about having an African-American starting quarterback. But, I mean, to the 21st century?
If he makes the cut.
He's there. But you're talking about 21st century for this to finally even happen. Doc Stanley, SportsNet Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. Roy McIlroy won the PGA, second back-to-back major, his third straight win. He's ascended to the number one ranking in the world, and not since Tiger Woods has anybody won back-to-back PGA championships. Woods started the PGA. It didn't make the cut. It's only the fourth time in his illustrious career that he hasn't made the cut as a major, and we have a picture of Tiger in our collage, sort of with a little set of look. We may have seen the last of Tiger Woods for a while. I think a lot of people with the consensus was Tiger should have not came back as soon as he did. In fact, he said he came back to the first tournament only because it was one of his sponsors' tournament. Maybe he shouldn't have, but the big thing we discussed the other day when we did the show from MetLife Thursday, and our guest, former president of NCAA out in Las Vegas, Wings, his name escapes me. Can you get that for me again? So we can have Mr. Andy Brewer, and he talked about that the problem with Tiger is that when he's mentally ready, he's physically not ready. When he's physically ready, he's not mentally ready. Until both of them get back on the same page, we're not going to see Tiger. I'm just thinking Phil Mickelson was one shot back, and him and Tiger start out in the same pairing. And as I said at the top of the show, Tiger won his last major in 2006. We're talking about, that's 8 years. We're going in 8 years, four majors a year, 32 majors. It's unbelievable that Tiger Woods has not won one. You would thought out of 32, Tiger would probably have half of them, at least one-third. But he has not had a major victory. I remember the last one, PGA, he was leading that. And a guy that just came out of nowhere. I remember the turning point was at about the 16th or 17th hole, Tiger landed a little bit in the rough, and the other guy was, his ball was going to go down the slope. But what happened, it caught something, didn't go down, and the rest, they say, is history. Derek Jeter, more baseball history, most hits ever by a shortstop in the history of baseball, and the most hits by a right-handed batter in the history of the American League. And I'm looking at the all-time hit list. At top is Pete Rose. At top is Ty Cobb. Then comes Pete's at top.
Well,
then
I think
Ty
he's
Cobb.
Six now, right?
No, he's six. I'm not looking for right-handed batters. Let's see. I think Tush Speaker was a left-hander. So he has the most hits ever by a right-handed batter in baseball history, with the exception of Hank Aaron. Rose is number one. Cobb is number two. I believe Hank is number three, Stan Musial, and Tush Speaker is now number five. I believe Speaker was a left-handed batter. So Derek Jeter has the most hits by any right-handed batter in history of baseball, with the exception of the iconic Hank Aaron. He talked about at an All-Star game, somebody patted him on the shoulder, and he turned around and looked up at Hank Aaron. Hank said, "Hey, I wanted to meet you." And he was taken back, the great Hank Aaron. Wanted to meet him. Yeah, Hammer and Hank. Story about Hank Aaron. Hank Aaron won number 44. And when Hank first joined the team, as was the method by things were done, you gave a rookie a high number. And when Hank made the team, they gave him number 5. And Hank told him, "Look, could you give me a double-digit number? I really don't want a single number." So they gave Hank number 44. And Hank Aaron hit 44 home runs 4 times. And 1 year, he and Willie McCovey tied for the National League lead in home runs. And they both hit, 44 home runs, and they both wore number 44. The guy in the uniform said, had he known that, he'd have gave Hank number 66, and maybe he hit a 66 home runs a couple of times. Hank Aaron averaged 33 home runs and 100 RBIs per year in his great career. They talk about the night that Harvey Haddix was on the perfect game against the Braves. He went 12 perfect innings, 36 up, 36 down, And it was later acknowledged that the Brave players had the signs and still couldn't hit him. And Hank was hitting about 400 a year. And somebody before the game told Hank that, you know, they had the signs. And Hank said, I don't want the signs. Don't need the signs. And they told the story, too, in the World Series. He came to the bat and came to the plate. And Yogi Berra told him that he had the bat wrong. You know, he had to where the writing was on the outside. Hank told Yogi, I'm not up here to read. I'm up here to hit. And wow, he did 715 home runs, surpassing Babe Ruth, 755 in totality. And what I thought was really amazing was I found that February 5th is Hank Aaron's birthday. The next day, February 6th, Babe Ruth's birthday. One time, one two all time on the home run list. Doc Stanley, Sports Internet, Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. Let's take a quick little break, and we'll be back, talk a little boxing, talk a little more football, and I guess a little more baseball. Don't anybody move. Back into sports in depth. Saturday, yesterday, big fight card at the Barclays Center. Danny Garcia, Danny Jacobs, and Lamont Peterson headlined a Golden Boy card. Jacobs won the WBA Middleweight Championship of the World, and he was a guy, Harold, who was written off a couple years ago, had cancer. And now his pride is in the good Lord bringing him through and him being the first cancer survivor ever to win world championship. You know anything about Danny Jacobs, Harold? Have you seen him? He's Brownsville boy. Now he's added his name to the lustre and lore of the champions in boxing from Brownsville. You seen him? Know anything about him, Harold?
Well, I done seen a couple of fights of his and everything. And, you know, God bless the fact that, you know, he came through with this cancer problem and he's functioning very well and all that, you know. So, like you said, he's got to give all blessings to God. But at the same time, what he got yesterday was a gift, you know, basically. I mean, he wasn't fighting nobody. I mean, he fought a guy they knew he could knock out, and that's what he did. I mean, my thing about the sport in itself, the whole card was just, you know, all the favorites won. So, I mean, you know, you knew what was going to happen. And I mean, it's not showing too good for the boxing world for them having fights like that. No matter how, you know, how they build their records up, it's just the talent's not there.
Is this just a situation that guys just can't fight anymore? I mean, we add that to the lack of ability, and the thing you've always alluded to, you and we've presented 30, 40 years down, John Carnes and everybody, they're people who just don't know the game and trainers who don't, I mean, they can't train. They don't know the game, Al.
Well, Mel, you look at it this way, okay? Who's our promoters? Who's the matchmakers? And at the same time, who are the trainers out there today? We don't have Emmanuel Stewart. He was really the last of the real hurrahs of the great trainers that was really out there. I mean, you know, Gil Clancy is gone. You know, Stewart is gone.
Angelo Dundee, Bowie Fischer
is gone. I mean, Eddie Futch is gone. I mean, basically, you got nothing. You got nothing of it. And I was with some friends last night, and we were sitting down talking. And one guy sat there and told me, he said, man, you know how you were the last of the whole crew of those eras that really know, that knew about the boxing world. He said, man, I never thought about it like that. But then I looked back at it and I said, damn, is this true? I mean, they're gone. The great ones are gone. And that's what you got. You don't have the talent of trainers that know how to do anything. I mean, I listen to those corners when those kids come back to the corner, and all I hear is that throw some more punches. You can't back up. They're not giving them no instruction how to win the fight, you know, going to a different way of fighting the guy. Nothing. They just got one thing, throw punches. You know, I need you to throw more punches. I need you to cover up. They don't know nothing else but to say those kind of words. And that's sad for the kids because these kids really think they can really fight. And they really not, I mean, for today's time, yeah. But for the real world of trying, okay, putting you down as one of the greatest fighters of all time. So I guess what we need to do is separate the time from guys that fought from 1980, go with those great ones and put them in a separate category on down. And the guys from this point from 80 on up, then you get another category and then you say, okay, these guys for this era, they got their own little Hall of Fame or their own little champions going and let it go like that. Because you can't compare them with guys of yesterday because they don't even fit in there. They don't even fit in the gym workout. I wouldn't even use the guys as sponsors.
Wow, Howard. They don't even fit in the gym workout.
I'm serious. You don't know. There was the gym workout. Guys, people, we used to have 50 to 70-something. You know, we used to have a lot of people just come to our gym, okay, just to watch the workout because the gym workout was just as good as the darn fight's going to be at Madison Square Garden. You had top-notch fighters boxing each other in this gym, especially when they were getting prepared for a major fight. You know, I can give you a list. You had Tom Bethea, Emil Griffin, Rigo Valdez. You had Juan Laporte. You had Jose Napoli. I mean, you just had everybody, all these guys, Johnny Pearson. A gym full of great top-notch fighters, and they're boxing each other.
Wow.
Wow. Okay, so in our gym, no, would not have passed. They got knocked out and got beat up every day. I can tell you that right now.
So, Howard, you're saying just the quality is just not there anymore? Is that from the trainers now not willing to learn from the great trainers that you're talking about? Or what do you think?
Right now, they're lost because you know what's happening is that the great, like I said before, the great trainers are gone. So basically, you don't have the it's like going to school. If you don't have the teachers, the kids can't learn. Okay, so this is what's happening. So now the kids have got to learn by themselves. So whoever's got some kind of idea, you're gonna follow that person because that's the only one that's got a voice. And these trainers today don't know anything. They don't ask a trainer, teach a kid defense. What kid have you ever seen with defense in this sport today? That like what Benitez has, like myself, like Emil have, like Jose Napoli. I mean, these guys had defenses. They had great defense. They knew how to fight with defense. These guys don't know nothing. What their defense is, put their hands up and do the rope. The favorite fight without Ali said the rope a dope.
You bring up a tremendous point. I remember the first time when Leonard fought Duran, and they said, you know, Ray, you didn't fight your fight. And you were just talking about defense. Everybody in your era learned defense. People didn't even give Duran his defensive credit. Emil talked about when he first got with Gil, he said he didn't do nothing for 3 months but learn defense.
Right. And do it well. You know what I'm saying? These guys don't know nothing about defense, nothing about it. So basically, what I'm saying is that no, you don't have those old school guys around no more. So naturally, these guys are going learning boxing on a whim by looking at some films or reading a book. And I heard one guy said he taught his son how to train by reading a book. I just
laughed. Oh, wow.
I mean, so basically, you know, that's where they acted. And you know, I got to say, it's not their fault, but they just happened, they weren't able to catch up with those great trainers or get some advice or something from them before these guys perished out. And this is what the problem is. You just don't have it. And the greatest training they got today that they talk about is Freddie Roach. And I laugh at that.
You know, it's funny you said that. Dr. I reported that Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. And Freddie Roach is so much, if he's this great trainer, coining one of your great phrases, sad and touching, going back to one of Rooney's great phrases, you know, for the uninitiative to think that, and then the great line that Marion B. Boykin, black bodacious, brilliant, and brother always says, they're perpetrating the fraud. I mean,
right.
Freddie Roach is, I mean, I remember the problem you said, that it's amazing, you know, they keep talking about every now and then Eddie Fletcher was his mentor, but now as more popularity as Freddie's gained, you hear less and less about him being a disciple and his mentor than Eddie Fletcher. They're talking about he's this dad, he's the guy, but Pacquiao. But Marion Boykin once said, Marion B. Boykin, black bodacious, brilliant brother. You mentioned about Emmanuel Stewart, how much I miss my dear friend. And Marion said, in every major fight, Emmanuel should be in both corners. And you just talked about a little thing like that, just defense. And then Howard always said to a trainer, because there comes a certain time, Howard Wesson knows how many miles he has to run. Howard Wesson knows how many pushes he has to do. Howard Wesson knows how many miles. But there comes a time when you come back to the corner and Gil and your daddy says, Hal, you know what? Start working the body. Hey, Hal, you know what? Start working the jab. They see things that you don't see, and you can trust it. Now that they become you, that is your chief of staff. You're the general out there doing the fighting, you know, infantry, but these are the guys that say, hey, Hal, you know what? He's getting tired. Hey, Hal, back off. Yeah. And this is what you're saying here, Hal, is what you said, Long said, when guys don't know something, they can't tell you nothing, Hal.
They can't tell you nothing. And to tell you the truth, Mel, there'll be a time, right, you'd be in a fight, like you said, Gil and my father, right? I would be so happy. I lost that round, right? I said, boy, they better tell me something when I come back in this corner. I know they got something to tell me when I get to that corner. Sometimes I just hate it going to that corner, and I wish I could go to the other corner because I know if I lost the round, oh, they miles are going to be running, boy, and that's something I didn't want to hear, okay? So basically, but the thing was they were giving me great advice and everything to make a tough fight make it easier. And so that was the great thing about my father and Gil and everything is that they worked that hand-in-hand situation, but they knew how to respond to me. And it was – I'm just going to say this one thing. There was one fight I was in, and I lost the round. And I came back to the corner. I knew Gil was going to run up, but Gil was so cool. He just knew how to play this psychological thing, right? So he looked at me. He said, do you want to win this fight? And I said, yeah. He said, well – this is what we're gonna do. Now I'm getting all anxious here, him screaming, but he's now being mellow, and I'm saying, damn, what's wrong with him? So as he's telling me what to do in the fight, then I go out there and everything goes well and all that, and then I look at him right, and then he said, good job. And so I just take it like they knew how to push a button. That's simple as that. They knew what buttons to push and how to move and push it. Him and my father just knew how to do that. And that was the amazing part about him. I'm telling you guys, I love coming to the gym. You have fun. I mean, I was always learning. And that was the great thing about the sport with these guys, man, and how great. And I'm so grateful for them, man, for the knowledge they gave me. And the teaching they gave me of me growing up, man, to be the man that I need to be in this world, that, man, you can't even buy it. It's not even a figure on these guys on how much money you should give them or what they should earn or what they taught me and taught others and all that. And let me give you this, okay? You talk about Freddie Roach. Then why is Freddie Roach don't have three or four other champions in his stable, okay? Great trainers keep making champions. Manuel Stewart took the kids out of Detroit and made five champions out in Detroit. Gil Clancy made a guy named Emil Griffin champion. He made another champion, Rigo Valdez. He made Juan Laporte, Angelo Dundee, Luis Rodriguez, Cassius Clay, Muhammad Ali, okay? At the time, it was Cassius Clay. But the thing was, he had
Jimmy Ellis.
And even, let me give you another guy, Customato, okay? Floyd Patterson, Jose Torres, okay? I mean, they made other champions. That's
Mike
great
Tyson.
Trainers. Mike Tyson, right? I mean, that's great trainers. Okay, don't give me this one, make one champion with 100 damn belts out there and then talk about he's great. No, it doesn't work like that. We had one champion, okay, and these guys made multiple champions. So, I mean, give me a break about this Freddie Rose. The whole thing
well,
is
you know, I think, too, Doc Stanley, so we're looking for the first lady of SID Sports, the boxing lady today to join us. Yeah, I think in your modesty and your humbleness, and it's something that you always discard, and I think you really shouldn't, and we let the fans know you. They, you were another champion. You won an MSG welterweight belt. And so you can be added to the list of champions that Gil Clancy had. And you're right. A great trainer has more than just one prize pupil. And you look at the inordinate number, Willie Pastrana, Jimmy Ellis, Clash of Marcellus Kay, a.k.a. Muhammad Ali, Cus. I mean, he had Floyd. He had Mike. He had Jose Torres. I mean, you look at Emmanuel. Just to, I mean, Emmanuel started from the ground up with that whole cross
right.
thing. You know,
right.
Hill McKenty, Tommy Hearns, Mike McCullough, Mark Breland. People forget Mark Breland started out in the Kronk boxing gym. You know, that's Stuyvesant, but he's part of that Kronk boxing gym. And you're right. And I know there are some underlying factors too with the Freddie Roach thing. But the bottom line is, to just stiff and say, hey, I got one guy. But the biggest thing is, was, you know, Lady A said something the other day, and, you know, she's just amazing. And she's at the gym Wednesday, and they're talking about Saadiq Ali. And she says, you know, Doc, I'm talking with Dusty, but, you know, the way he's successful to a right, straight right hand. And lo and behold, he got knocked down yesterday with what? That straight right hand. And I'm always befuddled how you and Dusty and Lady A and GW, you can see these things, you know, where you need binoculars, and you get these people, which validate what you say, Harold, who are close to these guys. I mean, they're so close, they're far away. They don't. I'll never forget this. I tell this story redundantly. That's when you were the matchmaker of Madison Square Garden, the last great matchmaker of Madison Square Garden, and one of the greatest, and the Boxing Hall of Fame is perpetrated for it until you get in there. But I remember that's when Lisa was around the block. My man Ira had the place. And John is coming in. Hey, Mel, how you doing? He says, Mel, I'm over at the gym, and there's a guy throwing a jab straight up in the air. John said, who throws a jab straight up in the air? These guys today. Shook his head. About 20 minutes later, here you come. Yeah, Mel, these guys can't fight it. It's just, we're talking about this deterioration has moved into, what, three, almost four decades now, Harold.
Yeah, it has. I mean, I was saying this a while back, but one day when I got the job at Madison Square Garden, and I was talking to Gil, and I said, these guys ain't as good as it. He said, Harold, don't judge what these guys are today. No, they're not like what you guys were when you was coming up. He said, there's a different group out here. He said, you just got to just judge these guys on what the skills they have right now and then make your matches from that point. That's what Gil told me when I first got the job at Madison Square. Because I was like in shock from seeing how the talent has really changed from where it was when I first came to the gym in 1961 and watching great guys make moves. I mean, these guys in that era and what I saw in that gym, they scare you to death, okay? They will make you not want to be a fighter. I mean, that's how good they were.
Well, remember Mike Tyson got hurt doing one of his sparring sessions. I forgot which fight that was. Maybe one of you guys remember it. He got hurt. I think he hurt his hand or something like that. He was sparring for one of his big fights. Every fight that he fought was basically big, but you just don't see. I think that. And you guys make a valid point when you come to not only the talent, but just the overall
fundamentals. The fundamentals. The fundamentals. And Lady A, if you would just please speak up. And I've said this across the board in every sport. People today, the athletes today, are not fundamentally sound. They're bigger, they're stronger, they're faster. That doesn't mean nothing. I mean, either you can hit, or I used to be amazed at the boss when the Yankees win lose two, three games in a row, they'd have extra batting practice. If you can't hit, it doesn't matter. You can't hit it. So go and take an extra batting practice, you're not going to hit. And then how much of a better hitter are you going to be against the guy that's throwing the ball? So you can hit it. So you can't hit,
and now the guy's throwing the ball so you can hit, and then it's not in the game. But across the board, in every vocation of sports, guys are not as fundamentally sound. And people have brought into this power forward, small forward, point guard, shooting guard. That's straight up, excuse the vernacular, that's straight up bullshit. That's straight up manure.
But, you know,
Joe Dumars, when he came to the Pistons, they asked Joe Dumars, what kind of guard are you, a point guard or a shooting guard? Joe said, I'm a guard. Luther Rackley, talking with the great Oscar Palmer Robinson, greatest all-around player to ever play the game, greatest player of my money. And he said, Oscar, if you were playing today, what would you be? You'd be a point guard or shooting guard. He said, Luther, I'm a guard. I'm a guard. He said, in today's game, you got Mark Jackson bringing the ball up, and then he passes it to Reggie Miller to shoot. But if you look across the board, I mean, you look at this pitching thing. We talked about that. Maybe Dutch, you know, we talked about that. Okay, you've implemented pitch counts. You implemented a limitation on how long pitchers could pitch. So why is everybody all of a sudden having Tommy John surgery? The idea you bought the second car so the wife would not have to take the bus. She's still taking the bus, and the car is sitting in the garage. There's something wrong with that. I mean, there are more guys getting Tommy John surgery, and this is amazing. You pitch every 5 days. You pitch Monday, you won't pitch again until Saturday. You only can throw 100 pitches. Tom Seaver, the great George Thomas Seaver. And I remember talking to him about that, and I didn't know how great Seaver was. My dad did from the jump, my belated father. And I want to say real quickly, too, what I'm thinking about that game. Hold on. I got to do a little something here. We'll get back to George Thomas Seaver in a minute, who had the highest percentile of any player ever elected in the Baseball Hall of Fame, which I find kind of puzzling that a pitcher would get that. I don't understand how Willie Mays didn't get it. And a lot of people are wondering that same question, too, how Willie Mays didn't go in unanimously. But I want to do something here today, and I remember today in Brazil is Father's Day, okay? Well, we have Mother's Day here. It's celebrated in Brazil and across the world basically on the same day. But Brazil has Father's Day, the second Sunday of August. And so I wanted to have you, Father's Day, all the fathers here on the panel, okay? Happy Father's Day again. And go over to Brazil and say Happy Father's Day to my afiado, Chiquinho, Edson, his first name is Pelé, Ricardo, a.k.a. Al Pacino, Nelson Cotamacho Jr., international promoter extraordinaire, and I call him Ivo Ivo, and Fortaleza, Justino, the Tapajara Hotel, Dorado, dear friend who's the manager and who runs the hotel in San Paulo that you did. We got to stay for a little while there, the Americano there, wings. And so we want to say Happy Father's Day to all those guys and all our other Brazilian friends across the water. We just want to single out those gentlemen and at the same time put all the gentlemen here that are fathers. So once again, it's Father's Day in Brazil, and I'll maybe try to catch a Kino when we come up there. But once again, Happy Father's Day to all our dear beloved friends and fathers in Brazil and right here on the panel. And with that, let's take a quick move and salute some birthdays. As we know, this is also the birthday month of our president. Barack Obama, on the 4th of August, is his birthday. And the next day, the very next day, a guy considered by many the greatest nigga of all time, unquestionably the greatest player to come out of Georgetown, and that's none other than Patrick Ewing. The 5th of August is his birthday, as the day before is that of our president, Barack Obama. On the 29th, John Condon, who you worked with, Harold, my late beloved father, and James, John Van Godwell. And the 29th is also the birthday of Michael Joseph Jackson, and also the birthday of the greatest alto tenor sax player and the idol of Miles Davis and a quarter of others, and the man who brought in the bebop sound, none other than Charlie Parker. Birthday of ladies first, my first two children, Melvin Turco's godmother, Turco Service, the late performer Turco Service, Miss Thompson, not late, and also the great George McGinnis, one of the greatest players in ABA and NBA, and he would have just been such a great player in the NBA, but injury stopped him. So just say happy birthday really real quickly to Siva. My dad knew how great Siva was going to be and was, and I Talked to Dusty Baker about him, and it was the great Cito Gaston, outstanding hitter, a teammate of Hank Aaron, and the only African-American manager to not only win the World Series, but did it back-to-back. And if he wasn't the color he was, he'd still have a job. He'd have a job for the rest of his life for that. Bobby Cox only won one World Series. One! Bobby Cox managed with the Braves next forever. One World Series. Cito Gaston won it back-to-back. Back-to-back he won it. And it's like he never even existed. That Cito got fired. How in the world that could happen? Then they brought him back as a batting coach. Brought him back as a batting coach. Okay? You were third base, and they're going to bring you back as a pitcher. But the great Mr. Gaston, you know, didn't say anything. But he told me, I see him now, and I said, Mr. Gaston, how good was Tom Seaver? And he stopped and leaned against the wall, and he said, Tom terrific. Okay, Tom terrific. He said, if Tom Seaver had a one-run lead on you and went into the seventh, eighth, and ninth inning, his fastball got faster. The only pitcher to win, the only pitcher to strike out 200 batters 5 years in a row. And we're about to run the batting cage one day. Once again, all by the grace of God, this ability to meet these people. And I said, you know what, Senor, if you're around today, meaning, you know, you go 7, 8 innings, and then the bullpen, but you had to have a Mariano. I said, you won about 500 games. And he told me, and this is an exact quote, bullshit. Okay? I see what he said, bullshit. He says, you got to pitch every 4 days, and you got to go at least 7 innings. And I think that kind of stands out when you realize these guys who are only going with 5, maybe 4 2/3 if you throw 100 pitches, and now they're having arm trouble. I think that kind of validates it. Nolan Ryan didn't play that pitch count stuff there in Texas, and you can see how Texas kind of dominated a little while over there. So I'm just befuddled by all this Tommy John surgery. You're babying these guys' arm, and it's just part of the lack of fundamentals. And late Gene Mock talked about Sandy Koufax, and he said he saw Sandy Koufax warm up on the side. He said he saw Koufax throw 131 warm-up pitches. 131 warm-up pitches. And then went out to a perfect game no-hitter against the Phillies. Huh? Juan Marichal. I'll never forget the game. Marichal, Warren Spahn, who the greatest pitcher ever, the most wins ever, like left-handed pitcher, Warren Spahn, 363. Marichal and Spahn. San Francisco, out in Cannon Street Park. The late, great Bob Murphy, as an announcer, he's as the Mets are playing. He said, oh, okay, we're in the fifth inning, and it's nothing-nothing. Now we're in the seventh inning, nothing-nothing. They're in the ninth inning now. Marichal and Spahn still there. They're in the 13th inning. They're in the 16th inning. Hey, the game is over. Willie Mays just hit a home run in the bottom of the 16th inning, and Juan Marichal beat Juan Spahn 1-0. They both went 16 innings. Marichal told me he threw 247 pitches that game. 247 pitches that game. Not to mention the 8 warm-up pitches between every inning. It's a different era, gentlemen. And fundamentals is good. Go ahead.
And throw in the great Bob Gibson, who in 1968 had a 1.12 earned run average and must have had about 13 or 14 complete games.
He had more than 13 or 14 complete games. He had over 20 complete games. He had over 20 complete games. He may have that many in shutouts, but he 22-9, 1.18 ERA. Games he lost 6 by 1 run, and on 3 occasions he lost 2-0 and 1-0. 22-9, 1.18 ERA. You're right, but like I was saying, and Kershaw, when he threw this no-hitter not so long ago, that was his 15th complete game or his 13th complete game of his career. His 15th or 13th complete game of his career. When Sandy Koufax threw his no-hitter in 1965, okay, that was his 24th complete game of the year. His 24th complete game of the year. Kershaw hasn't completed 20 games in 8 years in the big leagues.
Hey, the complete game today is obsolete.
What befuddles me is if Harold is cruising along with a 4-hit shutout,
right,
in the seventh inning, why am I taking Harold out? Why am I taking? I mean, he's not going to pitch for another 4 days anyway. Why am I taking Harold out? And then why am I bringing you in the game in the eighth inning, and now I'm going to bring Wings in to close the game out, and then 2 days later when I need you, because I don't understand how you can't pitch one inning every day for the kind of money I'm paying you. I'm befuddled by why if you throw two-thirds of an inning today, and you threw one inning yesterday, you throw two-thirds of an inning tomorrow, and one inning the next day, which is a grand total about less than 4 innings, you can't do that 4 days in a row. I'm paying you, what, $17, $18 million a season? And you can't do that? Not to mention the guys can't hit today.
I mean, can you imagine, Doc, when if you're negotiating, if you a pitcher who was 22-9, 13 shutouts, 1.12 earned run average for the season, how much would they pay him today? If you're sitting at the negotiating table, what would it be?
They tell the story of Joseph Paul DiMaggio and our friend Hal's late great Burt Randolph Sugar, who was a close friend of Joe DiMaggio's, told me a couple of funny stories. Mr. DiMaggio, once again, all by the grace of God, and through another one of your buddies, Hal, and my last great mentor in radio and sports, Art Rush Jr. Art introduced me to Mr. DiMaggio, and we became friends to that certain degree in the venue area that could be. And they told the story of they asked Mr. DiMaggio, Joseph Paul DiMaggio, and I say Paul because all of the DiMaggio brothers' middle name was Paul. Dominic, Vince, and Joseph all had the middle name Paul because, as Bert told me, it was their father's favorite saint. And they asked Mr. DiMaggio if he was playing today, what kind of money could he make? And he said he'd go into George Steinbrenner's office and say, "How you doing, partner?" No money to be said. I mean, the kind of money that's out. I remember Jose Canseco signed that big contract with the A's, and I said, "Wow, he signed in 1 year for more money than Mays, Mantle, Clemente, DiMaggio, Koufax, Gibson, Seaver, Marichal, Aaron, Campanella put together, plus more." And the late Arthur Richmond, when he executive with the Yankees, close friend of Willie Mays, he said he spoke to Mr. Mays one time and he asked what kind of numbers would he have today if he was playing today, because the pitcher, it's bad enough that they baby him, but they can't pitch, and he asked him what kind of numbers would he have today. And Foley said he hit about 400, 90 home runs, 200 RBIs. Mind-blowing. Lady A, are you with us? I thought the ladies were going to join us. I wanted to get the update on what happened that fight last night. As you know, Danny Jacobs, as Harold said, all the favorites won. Danny Jacobs won, becoming the WBA middleweight champion of the world. Danny Garcia retained his title and championship. And Lamont Peterson and his brother, the Peterson brothers, both won last night. The guy that Michael Bellamy is so big on, Sadiq Ali, he won last night. I'm going to be on Michael Bellamy's show tomorrow. Maybe we can get Mike to come in here and join us before we close out. Getting back to basketball for just a minute, jump shot. Love is going to land in Cleveland. It seems that Cleveland has not only got the king back, but they're also bringing some players to bring a championship back. Cleveland has not won a world championship of any significance since 1964 when Jim Brown led the Cleveland Browns to the championship over the Baltimore Colts. It's beginning to look like that they have a very good chance of getting back to the finals and winning this thing there. They've got Love. They've got some other really good pieces there, John.
Oh, no.
What's that, Jump Shot?
No, I'm still here. Okay. I didn't say anything.
Yeah. Well, I'm waiting for you to tell me something. What's happening here? I mean, they got Love. The James is back. Some other pieces are coming together. It's talking to the Hoopster. He says don't sleep on Miami. Of course, it rose, and that's the big question in Chicago. How is Rose going to play? Is he going to be 100%? But the Hoopster feels that Cleveland is not so much the team to beat if Chicago is healthy. If Chicago is not healthy, then he sees them as a team to beat. And he says something that I find puzzling. he says, don't sleep on the Miami Heat. Jump shot?
No, no, not at all. You know, I mean, it's, what it does is it has opened up the Eastern Conference for the first time in 4 years. So there is no odds-on favorite going in like it was when the Big Three joined in 2010. And so that's good for the league. That's even good for us here in Brooklyn and New York, you know, even though, you know, there's some development here that has to take place, you know, with Derek Fisher and Lionel Hollins. But no, no, in Miami, you can't count them out because they have two players on there who've won, who were part of that championship run, you know.
I disagree. I mean, Dwayne Wade is shot. Dwayne Wade is done, D-O-N-E. Physically, he's done. And he cannot do the things he used to do and the things he couldn't do was picked up by LeBron James. He's done, okay? All right? So I don't think anybody else wanted him because unless he was going to come and give some minutes off the bench, Dwayne Wade hasn't been Dwayne Wade, what, for 3-4 years now? I mean, he's able to give you flashes of Dwayne Wade, so I don't see him. He hasn't been able to play in 3 or 4 years. I mean, so
but he's going the way of Patrick Ewing. He's going the same way Patrick Ewing. He's going the same route Patrick Ewing did physically with the knees. I mean, he has the talent. I mean, he's a damn good player. But physically, the guy is just falling apart. And that's what happened with Patrick Ewing. Guy was an excellent center, but his knees gave out. Same thing with Larry Johnson. I mean, I don't think Johnson was up there with Ewing, but he's just not the same guy anymore. He's an old, what is Dwayne Wade, 33, 34? He's an old, he's old for that age physically.
And the idea that he's old is due to the continuance of the recurrence of the problem injuries. That has been the factor that made him age. I just don't see Miami without LeBron James, and Wade hasn't been the player that he's been for the last 3 or 4 years. I can't see him improving health-wise, and definitely I can't see him becoming the player he used to be, okay? And I think nobody, I think I salute Miami for giving the contract, sort of saying, hey, thank you for what you've done for us, and allowing him, if he's big on staying with one team his whole career. He's won three championships. And with some guys who never won any championship, he's an all-star. He's unquestionably a Hall of Famer, but in no way stretching his imagination to actually the Miami Heat. I mean, the only way the Miami Heat does well is because that division is horrible. And, I mean, now we got to see what happens with the Nets, the loss of Paul Pierce. I don't see that being a great loss. The key to the Nets, and that's something Rooney always talked about, was Lopez. Lopez is the key to the Nets. But Lopez can't stay healthy either. I mean, you know, if he trips down the steps, if he's shoelace, he's done. So it'd be very nice to see him play for any length of time. So Miami, okay, maybe they could win a division, but they're definitely not going to be the quality team they were without LeBron James. And LeBron James reminds me of the great quote by the late, great John Francis Xavier Condit. And he talks about Oscar Robertson. And he said any team that Oscar Robertson left wasn't the same team after he left. And LeBron James, you saw it in the Cleveland, you're going to see that in Miami. I mean, Miami wasn't this powerhouse super team until LeBron got there. Wade helped. I mean, just like Mike, you know, things didn't fall in place for Mike until Scotty showed up, Cartwright, forget the nonsense about the triangle, until the players came there. And I've always said the big the sin to the hierarchy of the league for Mike came because the Detroit Pistons, I never saw a young team age so bad. I mean, Burry said Lambeers is just a dirty player, but you take away Lambeers, you still had Sally, you had the great Isaiah Lloyd-Thomas, you had Joe Dumars, you had Rodman, you had the microwave coming up the bench, and you had him with a guy that everybody doesn't talk that much about, but you made him the coach of the dream team is Chuck Daly. So I'm just, I just don't see Miami. I can see Jonesy, I can see them winning, but they're no longer the team they were with LeBron James gone. And if you remember, their big guy, he had some struggles coming into the playoffs,
I salute them for bringing him back, and they gave him a whole lot of money. I don't have any problem with it, but they gave him a whole lot of money. But I may be expecting him to play a bigger role from an offensive standpoint. Well, they have to for LeBron James going with Jones. I just don't see the way Wade's body has been breaking down on him being a factor. If he was the Wade of yesteryear, well, he could do the thing and pick up some of the slack with LeBron gone. But he's not Jonesy. He's not the player anymore. I think the coach, we're going to see what kind of coach he is, but I think he should get some kudos. The guy's been in the NBA Finals 4 years in a row, and nobody's mentioned his name. Nobody talks about the guy. 4 years in a row. The guy must be doing something right.
Do you guys mind if I time for a second?
Yeah, go
ahead. Do you guys mind if I leave my two cents?
What was that?
I'm sorry. My name is Christian Winfield. I got an invite here from Mr. Jones. How are you?
Yeah, we're fine.
How are
good.
You?
Come on in. You know, come on. Now, remember, you got the invite. He didn't tell you about the $5 a minute, did he?
Oh man, I might have to hang up real quick then. just to introduce myself real quick, I'm Christian Winfield.
What you got to say, brother?
let me just introduce myself real quick. Christian Winfield, senior broadcast journalist, a major at Hampton University. Intern at NBC Sports.
Did we lose him?
Excuse me?
Go ahead, Chris.
Okay, okay, maybe he'll come back.
Am I breaking up?
Teasing about the $5 a minute. He had something to say. Probably enough at all, pro with you. The Hoops is joining us. Dr. Andy Sports, Blog Talk Radio, Trust and Guard Network. We got a good half hour left here on Sports and Dub. And Hoops, jump shot, concurred with you. He's in Miami being a force, a team to beat. You told me you didn't see Cleveland being the number one team because of the fact that you felt that Chicago would be the number one team with the fact that Rose would be healthy. Now, if Rose is not healthy, then you see Cleveland ascending to the number one spot. I do not see any way, shape, or form Miami being the team they used to be. They could win the division because of it being a poor division, but then they're no longer the super team they were. And you can't miss a LeBron James and be the same team. And Dwayne Wade, as C-Wing just said, his body is breaking down on him. And then this is the thing I've never seen. I could throw him in the thing, too, but he's not as drastic as Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. I've never seen two guys, African-American bodies, just broke, just go. G.O., not doggone, long gone. I was stunned.
Well, the one thing this year, Doc, I'm not going to discount.
That Pierce got a two-year contract with anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody.
I'm not going to discount this
I just don't see Miami being a power team again, Hoopsa.
Well, like I told you before, can't count them out. We're kind of Indiana. They out the picture. They're done. So they're finished. So can't sleep on Miami. They still got a little team there. They just don't forget they got Luau Deng and got so many pieces back. So I still won't count them out.
No. And the one thing I'll say, the one thing we learned this year, this NBA season, is a highly motivated team. With older players like Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili, yeah, maybe they're physically better, but this team was motivated and committed all the way through the season.
I don't buy that committed nonsense. You got to have talent. If you
Derek
can't play,
Jeter.
You can be committed all you want. We're talking about the Spurs, Jonesy.
Derek
we're not
Jeter.
Talking about any team. That is a hell of a team. That's a hell
Period.
Of a team. They won before. Motivated. If you have to be motivated when you get on the floor, when you put on a professional uniform in any venue, if you have to be motivated, there's something wrong. Something wrong with you. Above all, I hate to lose. I got to give the Spurs some credit, but I still, I don't know if I told anybody about it, I still cannot take away from the fact that first game was a vital, vital factor. How do you... in an NBA championship finals, how do you not have your AC working? Then don't tell me that, okay, well, you know, they had to play. Yeah, they had to play in the same condition, but it didn't affect them the way it affected Miami. I would just love to have seen
2, 3, and 4, and 5,
series. Huh?
AC was working game two, game three, game four, and game five. You know that.
But there was some infighting somewhere. There was infighting.
The first game. Hold on. If they win the first game, it's true zip. That's a whole different story.
He was working.
That means that the Spurs have to beat them four times in a row.
And in three, four, and five,
they may have done it.
Like 20 points or more.
The point I'm making here, this is the point I'm making. It's inexcusable for you to be a professional, okay, have a professional reader in America, any place, and you have that kind of malfunction. At any time. But to have it at an NBA finals, the first game, that's inexcusable. And what should have happened, the league should have said, hold on, we're going to stop the game here. If you have a problem with that, you lose the game. That was totally unexcusable. And we were talking about a fight. I think it was Lady A. It was Jim Festa. Lady A. The point taken away from Perez in the fight against Jim, it turned the fight around. He lost the fight. If you don't take the point away, it's a draw. And let me tell you something. You know, a draw is better than a loss. Okay? Mm-hmm. Because you may be dancing with your sister, but you ain't got to pay the cash at home. You got to share it. So, I mean, I just... committed. You know, those words always kill me. You know what I mean? They're hungrier. I don't care how hungry you were. Okay? The first Ali, you were taking an ass with it. Okay? Okay? Durant at lightweight, Ray Robinson, Harold. If I was better than you, I don't care how hungry you were. If you don't have the talent, you ain't winning. And that's another great line. Well, you know what I mean? He's a 252 hitter, man. But you know what, man? Well, he brings to the clubhouse. And I have never... In any sport, Rangers 3, Clubhouse 1. Yankees 7, Clubhouse 2. Clubhouse 5, Mets. I've never heard a clubhouse winning a game. If you can't bring it down to the table.
Manila, two talented fighters. One wanted it just a little bit more.
Who wanted it more?
Who got it?
If you watch that fight, Joe Frazier was a fresher fighter. If you watch that fight, Joe Frazier told Eddie Futch, don't stop the fight.
Not in the 15th round.
And Joe didn't talk to Eddie Futch for years for stopping that fight. I don't think Ali wanted any more than Joe. It's just that Ali was a little more talented. He got over. I mean, Joe, he got the early lead. He closed Joe's eye. I mean, there's something that somebody said to me the other day, and this is a fight. You have to understand, you play basketball, you play football, you don't play boxing. The eyes closed, you can't see out of it. Hey, I remember Mayweather said something. We were somewhere, and the guy said, he said, you know what? He's got heart. Mayweather said something I'll never forget. He said, heart can get you killed in this game. If the guy who was the most exhausted in that fight, it wasn't Joe Frazier. It was Ali. You know what I mean? Just the way Joe was ready to give it up, that Joe gave it up. I was on the verge. I don't buy they wanted it more. If you don't have the talent, I don't care how much you want it. You ain't getting it. I mean, you don't think anybody that walked in the ring wanted to win against Ali or Frazier or Durant or Foreman or Ray Leonard or Al Weston? You got to have the talent. I've never bought into these shows. He wanted it more. They were hungrier. What he brings to the club. If you don't bring talent...
Doc, let me get you straight. You're wrong what you're saying about talent. Okay, I'm gonna give you a good example, and I'm gonna sit you down. Vito had a let me say this. Vito Antifermo didn't have no talent.
Who that?
Vito Antifermo. He did not have no talent. He just had heart. But he was middleweight champion of the world, the real middleweight champion of the world. I rest my case.
Yeah, but hey, whatever he had more than the other guy. Here's the bottom line. The people thought that first fight with Marvin, he got the benefit of the doubt.
Sometimes,
the right call, how wanting it, if you ain't got what it takes with the wanting it, you ain't getting it. It's that simple.
Stop.
I'm saying to you is that
he won the middleweight championship of the world, okay? And he didn't have talent. That's what I'm saying to you. You say you got to have talent. Okay, listen.
I'm gonna right now, because before this dating game love match nonsense starts, I'm gonna let Lady A come in now. So back off, Al. Let me bring her in. Okay. All right. Good Lady A. Lady A. The first thing she says, she doesn't say hi, Carol. Hello.
I love you, Harold.
I love you too, dog.
This has to stop. It's gotta stop.
Me and Lady A gonna get our own. The love.
Hey, man, last night, Barclays Center, Danny Jacobs won the middleweight championship. You talked about something though, and you before you came in here, and Jonesy, we're gonna battle against some more, baby. They're the best ever do it. Jump shot, Jonesy, double barrel, how? Lady A, the Hoopster, Cincinnati Seawings. Adrian and Hal talked about this, and we talked about it before you got on the air, and you talked about what you saw in Saddam Ali. And I'm always befuddled how all of y'all here can be from a distance and see so far what other people can't see. And you talked about, you say, hey, you know, the way he's fighting, he's successful to that right, and last night the right hand knocked him down, Adrian.
Well, I had said that when I was watching him work the bag, Harold, how you know how guys shoot the overhand right, but then it's like after they shoot the overhand right, they don't pull it back quick enough, and if their chin's out, they get hit with the overhand shot coming back. And I saw him hitting the heavy bag, I'm like, why is he? I could see like sometimes he would throw his punches. And then when he threw his punches, he leaned forward, like after he finished executing the punch, Harold. So I said, if he does that in a fight, he's gonna get knocked out. And what happened in the fight? That ended up happening. Somebody caught him with a nice hook, and he ended up going down. I said, okay, you know, I saw it during the gym. I saw it happening in the gym, but apparently the trainer didn't tell him anything. And Dusty had told me that he got hit with a nice shot last time too, the same way.
Well, let me say this. Lady A done said it all, right? The trainer didn't even see it. So what does that tell you about these trainers, okay?
Well, we said that already. I mean, and here's the guy the closest to him. And now, Dusty said this happened in a previous fight. Lady A picks it up. She's been there all about 32 seconds and watches it. But then again, there's nobody like Lady A in boxing. None of you guys, the jump shot, the hoopster, Harold, Seawings. And ladies and gentlemen, I say this, you. Too old as I am somebody. The people you hear here, they're not the best. No, don't get me wrong. They're not the best. They're the absolute best. You're not going to get any better. Did you hear what Jump Shot was telling you? Hoopster, Lady A, Harold. These are people who are the foremost authorities in what they do. And sports in depth. Not only do we bring you an in-depth perspective and look not only of the sports and the people who play them, we bring you also an historical look at the sports of yesteryear, and if need be, this panel, they can go politics, they can go science, they can go math, they can go weather, sports in depth. In a minute's notice, can turn into the world in depth. But you're seeing some things here. Harold Weston was the first guy to say, hey, wait a minute, fellas. Well, no. This is how the money goes. I pay the taxes first, and then I pay you. Okay? Turn around. You know, it was here that Cincinnati Seawings told you that President Obama had taken down the bad guy that the previous administration somehow couldn't find. Okay? Jump Shot just said, and that the young fellow that was here, I wish he would come on back. Maybe Mr. I teased him. I don't want him to think that we really were charging $5, but I thought we had him. He wanted to interject something on here, and I don't see him, so maybe he did leave. Maybe he'll come back. But from a sports standpoint of view, you know, and Howard brought a point about Vernon, but like I said, you can warn it, but you got to bring something with it. Harold talked to you earlier about gym sessions. Fundamentally, the guys are just not here anymore. Adrian, getting to you, Danny Jacobs was the feel-good story of the whole boxing thing coming back to the Barclay. He was the inspiration. Oscar De La Hoya talked at that first press conference about the admiration and respect of a guy who, by the grace of God, had gotten over cancer and was boxing again. And I remember what had happened. I took my Sports and Depth Entertainment Artifacts boxing jacket down there, and he came and he signed the jacket,
And I found out, well, he's not a world champion because all I have on his jacket is a world champion. But now he is. But, okay, what's the word? Is this the last fight for Danny Garcia at 140? And is the Kid Chocolate Danny Jacobs fight in the works?
Well, the way it stood last night, it seemed like Danny Jacobs had kind of called him out and said that he kind of he wanted to fight him. He said it looked like pretty much that that's the way they were going to go. As far as, like, Danny Garcia goes, I think that in the workout we had spoken to him about it, and his father was even saying that, you know, he has to wait and see how he feels. We've talked about it before on the show about him going to 147. I think the 147 division is a very dangerous division for him to go up to. He's going to have to – I don't know what decision he's going to make. I just know that based on what he said to us in at Gleason's, that he said, you know, he has to see how he feels. So we'll
yeah,
see
yeah.
What
he
happens.
Was saying, maybe he'll do one more at 140.
Mm-hmm.
This portion of sports.
But if he does,
but if he does,
I think Lamont Peterson is looking to take him. Because Lamont Peterson I think if he does, I think Lamont Peterson is looking to fight him.
But aren't there more marketable names, money wise, for Danny to fight than Lamont Peterson?
Well,
yeah,
okay, let's go down the line. You know he's not going to fight Pravnikov. You know that's not going to happen because nobody wants to fight Pravnikov.
And you know,
at 140 now, Alvarado moved up to 147, so I don't know if he's going to go back to 140. And Brandon Rios is staying at 147. And Broner, I don't know what he's going to do, okay, as far as who he's going to pick after his next opponent in September, because he's got a fight on the 6th. So I don't know who he's going to take out again at in that division at 140. But I would say the money fight would be with Matisse, but I don't think he's going to fight Matisse.
What about Juan Marquez? Why,
at 140? He's at 147. You think he's going to go down to 140, though, Harold? I don't know.
A couple of $1 million in his face. Yeah, he's come down to 140.
That's always a possibility,
why not fight Matusse again? That would be a tremendous. He's got nothing to lose. If you lose the fight, then you do the trilogy. But if you beat him again, you got another big payday and you move on. I mean, if you beat Matusse once, and that's the thing. I mean, it's a great rematch. Matusse is working his way back up to a title shot. So if Danny's going to stay at 140, why not fight Matusse again? And that's the fight that people, everything now is a pay-per-view fight, but people would like to see that fight. I think they would like to see that fight against Peterson. I don't think people want to see him fight Peterson. You know,
but you see, when I started talking about Broner, he skated away from Broner. Like, he didn't want to fight Broner.
Well, yeah, but you know, he talked about the Broner thing. Because they both have the same management, but like Howell said, for the right kind of money, you know. I tell you what, if you don't fight Matusse, you fight Broner. Top Rank does it with their fighters. So if you don't fight Matusse, you fight Broner. Then give me just a minute. This portion of Sports and Depth has been brought to you by Beauty and Barbershop Andreas, 27B 107th 6th Street in La Brosse, Panama. And once again, that is Beauty and Barbershop Andreas, 27B, 175th Street in the Bronx, my man Panama. And just get on up there, tell them Sports and Depth sent you, and you're right, there's a 10% discount on the cut. They got everything there now. You've got any kind of haircut you want, he can do for you. We've got some, any kind of hairstylist there, female-wise. So once again, Sports and Depth, brought to you by Beauty and Barbershop Andreas, 27B, East 175th Street, Viva Panama. And let's run it back in again. Also, I mean, my thing, he did tell us, and we want to also thank and remember that the second portion of Sports is brought to you by the Crystal Heart Show, New York City's number one and prettiest female sportscaster. He told us that maybe he would do one more fight at 140 for the right kind of money, though he did say he would fight Broner. I think that that'd be a good fight. I think that'd be a good fight, and I think if you could get Kid Chocolate, okay, to fight Danny Jacobs, that'd be a good fight. Maybe, I don't know what's going to happen Golden Boy-wise, because Bernard Hopkins is fighting for a title, but who comes to see Bernard Hopkins? So you could put Garcia and whomever, and you could put Chocolate and Jacobs together, and you'd have a nice card.
Well, there was also they were also throwing in Danny to fight Triple G. So I don't know. I don't know which way they're gonna go. I mean, because you know, there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys that out of there that he could fight. You know, you got Triple G, you got Cotto, you got Martinez, you got Gennady Golovkin.
Well, yeah, but Cotto's done. Cotto's gonna fight Andy Lee, and we know he's gonna springboard to that Alvarez. Alvarez is fighting Kirkland, right? So they've said things
Kirkland.
Once again, these domino effect fighters, guys are going to fall so these guys can do that Cinco de Mayo fight. So I don't Cotto's out. Cotto would be stupid. I don't think too much Cotto fighting Andy Lee. I don't think Cotto should take a chance unless Andy Lee understands that he can't win this fight, and I guess Andy Lee is picked because he really can't win the fight. So we're looking at Cotto, Andy Lee, and then we're looking at Alvarez and Kirkland, and then we're looking at, good Lord willing, we move into the next year, Cotto and Alvarez, that big fight happening. Danny Garcia could do one more fight at 140. Adrian?
What about Cotto and Triple G?
Hey, Adrian, come on. Now, you know better than that. I didn't mention his name. He'll fight Triple G, okay? After he fights Lee, after he fights Alvarez, and then Mayweather tells him he's not going to be one of his last two fights, then he'll possibly fight Triple G, and he'll only fight Triple G in his sleep, a fight he knows he can win. He's not going to fight Triple G. He will dream the fight with Triple G, and he wins by third round knockout. He's not going to fight Triple G. That's out. Real quickly, gang, I want to get back to Jeff Shot Jonesy. What's the story, Jonesy? Is Vic going to be the starting quarterback, or is Gino going to be the starting quarterback?
Good question. It looks like Gino right now. Let's see what happens in the next two preseason games. But I would say, you know, Gino, you know, is the front runner right now. But he may be on a short string. He may be on a short string because if Gino, they have a tough schedule starting out, Doc, and if he's not putting some wins on the board, I can see Rex Ryan pulling him and going to Michael Vick early, maybe by game.
You know, Jim, I say this is what happened, and Adrian used to be in that press box, and she would just, I mean, she would crack up at the inefficiency of the Jets. Especially her dear friend Mark Sanchez. I said this. This is the first time I can remember, probably since Dave Perilli, that the Jets had a serious backup quarterback. No, okay, no, they did have Lucas there. But this is the first time during the Ryan era, okay, that the Jets have had a backup quarterback. I think the Jets' problem has been that they couldn't pull the first-string guy because the second-string guy couldn't do it. Now you can pull Geno down with understanding. Vic is not here to take the job. He's here to win games, and you'll start again next week. This is the first time, Jump Shot, that we've had a backup quarterback, a legitimate backup quarterback during the Rex Ryan era.
Yeah, but you know what, Doc? I'm going to tell you something. I think while the focal point naturally is on the quarterbacks, and that's usually how it is around the league, I think with the Jets, they have a running game. If this offensive line gels and develops, you won't focus on the quarterback because this guy, Chris Johnson, if he gets back into 2,000-yard form, and then you have Chris Ivory, who was an effective running back last year, and then Bilal Powell, these guys are going to make it easier on whatever quarterback is back there. One thing you don't want these guys to be in is a situation where they're second and long or third and long. And if Chris Johnson is hitting a hole on first down and he's gaining 4 and 5 yards a pop, that's going to make their job a lot easier.
They still got to get that end zone. They still got to score points instead of field goals.
I agree,
Hoopster.
You got to run the ball. You got to in November and December.
And no penalties too. They get penalized a lot too, and penalties.
You know, Hoopster, that's amazing. You said I'm at the game last night. Pittsburgh has 9 points, and I said, wow. I said they've been in the red zone 3 times and come away with just 3 points. I said if they had scored at that particular time just one touchdown, they would be they'd been winning the game. And I've always said this: you can't go down in the red zone and come away with three. That's a psychological advantage for the defense.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, if it makes any sense. Yesterday's game, I looked at the first quarter. The Steelers had the ball 10 minutes. They had 3 points. Giants had the ball 2-something minutes. They had 7 points. Hoopster, you're right. You got to get in the end zone. I mean,
and penalties, too. And penalties. And holding penalties.
Yeah,
a lot of penalties,
but also,
too.
But you also have to prevent the other team from getting in the end zone.
Good point. Yeah, well, you know, if you can get three field goals,
that's
all
how you
one,
win. That's how you win championships.
On
Seattle.
On the Tokyo Dogs Network. And we're telling you this portion is brought to you by Beauty and Barbershop Andreas, 27B East 175th Street in the Bronx. I'm in Panama, and also the Crystal Heart Show. They're all here. The First Lady of SID Sports last night live from Barclays Center. A small mini segment of the Boxing Way with Lady Double Barrel Harold Weston Jr., Jump Shot Jonesy, the Hoopster, and Cincinnati Seaweeks from NFL 411. I'm Dr. Your host. We're talking a whole lot of things. Gang, okay, these injuries that the Jets are all of a sudden having, the big thing I think here, as we talk Jets football and we get back to boxing in a second and basketball, I think the big thing here is that we will also see a quick leash on Geno as hopefully you can wings you can start it, as Rex Ryan is his job is up in the air.
Well, definitely, I think he's really on the hot seat this year. I think the play that Geno and the Jets going to win 3 of the last 4. In December last year helped. But, I mean, you look at the schedule through week 9, week 11, or whenever the bye is, they're going to have to play 6 of the toughest quarterbacks in the league. Peyton Manning, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Phillip Rivers, Big Ben, I mean, Jay Cutler. I mean, this is going to be a tough schedule. So if you see Geno struggle, and even the first game against, and I've been saying this all along.
Can I interrupt here for a minute?
So
basically, it's going to be another Jet season.
Wow. Well, they ain't got Sanchez, so ain't no excuse this time. They ain't got Sanchez, no excuse.
Yo, ask me what JETS stands for. Just end the season.
Wow. Oh,
that is harsh. That is harsh. But
I
see that.
You need to cut that mic off on her. That was cold.
You're going to see him go to Michael
Vick.
Can we go to
commercial break, please? Can we go to commercial break?
That was hilarious. Steve Wings is like, what's that ETC stand for? Just end the season.
Cut that mic off on her. That was cold. I guess you be banned. I guess the fans going to remember you now. They may even say your name, lady, at the press box, boy. They say put you on the screen and boo you.
Oh, man.
It's going to be tough. That's a tough stretch.
Wow.
But you know, they had that season. They had a season like that like 2 seasons ago. Remember, Sea Wings? They had that season like that like 2 seasons ago. It was hard in the beginning. They had a lot of teams that they had to play out, and they did all right. So.
Win-loss. But they missed the playoffs the last 3 seasons. So, I mean, how long is Woody Johnson and the organization going to hold on to Rex, who's a great defensive mind, but, you know, he kind of overlooks the offense. Eric Decker, the number 2 wide receiver, the question is going to be who's going to be the number 1. Is it going to be Stephen Hill? I mean, he's going on his 3rd season.
Look,
is it
going to
be Jeremy Curley? Jacoby Ford? I mean, the question is who's going to take over the number 1 receiving spot? And the cornerbacks,
they might have to look for a cornerback. So 2 of them are hurt, right?
They gave up 3 of them: Dimitri Patterson, D. Milliner, and the rookie Dexter McDougal. He's out.
This is just amazing that they didn't snatch Cromartie back and made no serious gesture to get Revis back, and now it's all. I mean, this is what we're 2 games into the preseason, and this is already blown up in your face. I mean, they're on the road this week in Cincinnati.
Then they're going to come back, and we'll be there live from MetLife Stadium. The Jets and Giants preseason game, the Cincinnati Seahawks and I will be there. We want to thank Lady A for that tremendous live from the Barclays Center, the boxing ring with Lady A, update that she brought up last night. And we brought you two live games from MetLife. And once again, when the Jets and Giants play again, we'll be at the game, and they'll both be playing each other. But we're talking so much about the Jets. And, you know, Jonesy, what about the JPP? I mean, and you know, and Adrian and Wings and Hoopster, you know, back injuries just don't clear up. And you can look good. And I've always thought this has been a big problem. And Dusty was funny about this. But the AstroTurf, that cannot be advantageous to whatever bothers these guys.
I mean, the back surgery in itself is a big, risky operation, and especially when you're playing in a gladiator sport like football, where each and every play can mean possibly your life. You look at Dennis Byrd, nearly died and was paralyzed for a certain amount of time, and you see the Rutgers defensive player that was paralyzed a couple of years ago. It's definitely a tough sport, but you look at some guys, they bounce back and some don't. Look at Adrian Peterson, he bounced back. Look at Peyton Manning from the neck surgery, he bounced back. But look at David Wilson. Career's gone at the age of 23, so I think it's an individual thing as well. You can't
look at Tony Romo. He says it might end his back. He might not come back. He's not looking good. His back.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Dr. Sandy Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard. It's a Sunday wrap-up, and Rory McIlroy has wrapped up another major, his second in a row. He's won the PGA today, three tournament wins in a row, and he's also wrapped up the number one rankings. That's amazing that's amazing that 23 years old, his career is done. You know, let's do a little mic on light talk to be safe. Hold tight. We're going to do Marvin Gaye. Larry's going to take us away. We'll be right back. So anybody move, Doc Kelly's posting the Blog Talk Radio, the Trust and Guard Radio Network, and we're here with the crew. Larry Hardesty will have this to say, and Marvin Gaye will this to say. We'll be back here with mic on, lights off, as Rudy loves so much to talk about here on What's the Blog Talk Radio, Radio Network.
Mr. Hi, I'm Larry Hardesty from ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
I just want to ask a question. Who really cares? Save a world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world
flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No, bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined to
that
die.
Is destined to die.
When I look at the world,
when I look at the world,
it fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today,
children today,
are they gonna suffer tomorrow?
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life.
Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
See, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live, but who really cares? Who's willing to try? Yeah, to save our world. Yeah, save our sweet world. Save a world that is destined to die.
Thank God for the love of God. That's done did. Our station 47, Live Fact Radio, on the Trust and God Network. And this station 47 is brought to you by the Crystal Heart Show, New York City's number one and funniest female sportscaster. And we'll give you her times and slots in just a second. Gang, Michael Lights Up section. Both of you guys are our football gurus, Jump Shot Jonesy. Jump Shot, Greg Jump Shot Jonesy, and Lewis Hoops the Heart. What do you guys feel that, okay, Miami's going to be involved with it. How much is that because they're still a good team, or how much is that because the division that they're in? I mean, it's the first time the division has opened up like this. Jump Shot, are they going to be a viable team because of the lack of competition in the division, or that they're still a good basketball team? Jump Shot? Hey, well, who you can start off then.
Yeah,
they're going to be...
I think, I'm right here. I think
go,
the combination of both, but more the latter than the former, because these guys as a unit, we're head and shoulders above everybody else in the conference. But now that they're apart, they're on two different teams, in addition to the addition of Pau Gasol and... in Chicago, along with Derrick Rose coming back, it just opens things up now, you know. And I think it's more of the competition in the conference that has just grown. It's just better. It's going to be more competitive. It's going to be more fun. In addition, one more thing, Doc. In addition to the Wizards, let's not forget the Wizards. And I know you're not big on Paul Pierce, but his addition to that young team down in Washington. It's going to be a plus.
Well, but Jonesy, okay, here's a question.
Well, I got something to say to that.
Why is his plus to the Wizards going to be better than what he had with the Nets? I mean, the Nets were a young team, and they were a better young team. And then you can dovetail.
Well, don't forget, this guy left and went to Houston.
I like
what Jones was saying, but the Wizards are going to be pretty good, too. But don't be surprised at 2016, you'll see Kevin Durant on that team. Don't be surprised.
You keep saying that.
He'll be
so
free agent 2016.
How much that depends, I think. You're talking 2016. We're talking about 2 years. Good luck providing. I mean, so I've got to say in 2 years then, he's got to win a championship or two to be satisfied to leave. I mean, we don't know. The Wizards are going to be that good of a team. Does he want to come home that bad? I mean, unlike LeBron, who came home, he came home with four runs in the championship round for the title, two championships, with three MVP awards. I mean, in 2 years, is Durant going to have that kind of resume, or you just saying hopefully he's just homesick?
Homesick. And don't forget, also, the Wizards don't have Trevor Ariza. He went to the Rockets, so that's why they picked up Pierce. They needed scoring. So Trevor Ariza went to Houston. So Trevor Ariza's
Pierce needs somebody to pick up scoring. There was some
experience.
Pierce got you 5-6 points.
Yeah,
unless he's going to be physically better than what he was, maybe it was physicality of the injuries and stuff, but we'll see.
It could be the play calling, too, you know. Could be play calling, too, because Devin Williams had the ball a lot in his hands. So it could be play calling.
That's an interesting name. That's an interesting name, because there's a guy, too, that can't stay healthy. I think if he stayed healthy last year, the Nets win another 5-6 games, maybe win the division? So he's a guy that seems to be, you sneeze on him, he gets hurt. I mean, how much longer, and you go first, so how much longer do you see him playing? I mean, he gets hurt.
Don't forget Lopez, too, and Lopez.
You're right there. I mean, Lopez is a big guy that gets hurt. He's a little guy that gets hurt. I mean, they're not 1 year, every year. Every year.
Don't forget about Toronto Raptors and Dwayne Casey's Toronto Raptors. Lance Stevenson now in Charlotte.
And that's a coach that got no credit. Should have been coach of the year.
I picked him as coach of the year.
You always
got to
question the politics.
They give it to Popovich.
I mean, the politics and also the racial makeup. I mean, they probably was supposed to win with that team. I mean, he'd won champions before. He's supposed to win with that team. And anything he did to a certain degree, not surprising. I mean, because the consensus was he blew the championship last year. But this guy in Toronto, he didn't do a good job. He did a very good job. He did a great job. And it just, as Howard Wesson would say, sad and touching. And Rooney would concur and say a point well taken. And a great injection by you there, too, Jump Shot. Gentlemen, before we close, you gave me your all-time team. Frazier, Monroe in the backcourt, Dr. J, Elgin Baylor up front, and the Dipper in the hole. Jump Shot, what is your all-time starting five?
Hey, Doc, I gave you this before. You're going to get me in trouble because if I have to leave off, if I have to get in between Russell and Abdul-Jabbar, and I have to leave one of those guys off. Oh, not even mention Wilt. And one of my all-time favorites, Willis Reed. I'm going to be in big trouble. I don't know if I can give you an all-time.
It's not like I'm going to tell him. You know what I mean?
Don't forget, you got bench. You got 6 men and 7 men coming off the bench, too, now.
I hope you don't tell him, Doc.
Well, you know what? The thing I liked about let me get my pen. The thing I like about Hoops' team, And if I got it right, Hoopster gave us that team, and I believe on that team you got Jordan coming off the bench on that team, Hoopster?
Yeah, I had Jordan come off the bench. Shucks. That would blaze everybody. That'd be it after that. That Earl and Clyde in the backcourt, man, forget it.
it's funny that you mentioned Earl. I remember after a Chicago Bulls game and Clyde leaving to go upstairs to go into the booth, and I asked him, I said, Clyde, how would the old Knicks handle Jordan? And he said, we put Earl on him. So
a lot to be said for that. I got to keep these teams down because I want to have them for when we
Doc, you want to hear a story? You want to hear a story? There's a guy named, I know Jump Shot probably heard him, Kenny Charles. He used to play for the Buffalo Braves with Bob McAdoo and them. He lived in Flatbush. He said every time he played the Knicks, he said he hate the guard Earl Monroe. He said he hate the guard Earl.
Well, there's a classic line that asked Clyde. I've been redundant. Yeah. They say, how do you guard Earl? He says, Earl don't know what he's going to do. How am I supposed to know what he's going to do? And Clyde
yeah, King Charles, he hate to guard him. And Lori Free said he can't guard him, too. He said he give him fits.
Oh, man.
Since he played in Philly.
When you look at the great guards, which is Oscar, him, and Earl, that area, he said, you know, Wes was looking for a jump shot. He said, Oscar's looking to back you down. He said, but every time down the floor with Earl, it was a brand new day. Jump shot, what's your team? Just starting five.
I got to put Earl Monroe on there. I love Earl Monroe. Earl Monroe is definitely one of my one of my selections there. But, you know, I guess I have a New York bias because Walter Clyde has to be on that team as well.
Okay.
Fine, okay.
The forwards, that's tough, you know, because I'm a big Bernard King fan.
All right, that's a good pick.
Dr. J, how can I – Dr. J? Michael Jordan? How can I leave Michael Jordan off any team? So
your backcourt. But what's your starting five then?
Wow. My starting five at center. I'm going with Russell.
Okay.
Forwards. I'm going with Julius Erving.
Okay.
And Karl Malone.
Yeah.
That court. Go with Oscar Robertson and Walter Clyde.
Wow. A heck of a team.
My team would be this team, that's for sure.
Let me see, you got Oscar and Clyde in the backcourt. Well, you had Clyde on your team too.
I had Earl in the backcourt.
Ice team was him. And Magic in the backcourt. He had Doc and Malone up front, and he had Jabbar in the hole.
Okay.
No.
He picked Russell.
Russell.
He picked Russell. Doc.
Russell.
He picked Karl Malone.
He had Jabbar. He had Jabbar in the hole. A guy countered. He countered with this team being the team he felt could beat that team. He said he would have his front line would be Russell, the Dipper, and Baylor. I guess Russell was playing one of the forward spots. In the backcourt, Oscar and George. That would be his starting five.
That'd be a good pick. That's a lot of good picks, man. Hey, can't go wrong with that.
Now, if you have to play the guys in the positions, and this is some Doc Stanley Sports Depth Live Talk Radio on the Trust and God Network. The first portion of Sports and Death was brought to you by Beauty and Barbershop Andreas, Viva Panama, 27B East 175th Street in the Bronx. And this portion of Sports and Death is brought to you by The Crystal Heart Show, New York's number one and loveliest female sportscaster, Crystal Hearts on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. weekly. And you can see her on Time Warner Channel 56, RNCN Channel 83, and Verizon Channel 34. The lovely, the talented, and New York City's number one and prettiest female sportscaster, Crystal Hart. 9 o'clock Tuesdays, channels once again Time Warner 56, RCN 83, and Verizon 34. This portion of the Sports and Depth, Mic on, Lights Off, is brought to you by the Crystal Hart Show. And my starting team, I got Oscar and Jordan on the ball. Baylor has got to be one of the forwards, greatest forward of all time. When you look at stats and all, I would put the other forward, and I have to go through a horde of them. But my other forward would be Dr. J. And now the middle is with that team. I couldn't go wrong. You have the inclination to go with Russell because of his defensive prowess, but you forget that Russell, Chamberlain averaged more rebounds a game than Russell. You know, they both averaged over 20 rebounds a game. So you could put Dip in the middle, and you have to remember that Chamberlain led the league in assists. So he could fit in that spot. Chamberlain led the league in assists. So I got a guy that's going to pass the ball, get me 20 rebounds. But what has always been amazing to me, and the Hoopster said this yesterday, that was such a eye-opener, is why, when you talk about the greatest player to ever play the game, the guy that won 5 MVP awards, the guy that played 20 years, the guy that won 5 championships, and the guy that had the shot that was totally unstoppable, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's name never comes up. And the Hoopster said very simply, Doc, he was a Muslim. You know, and then you can dovetail on that he was a black Muslim. But it was amazing that when they talk about the greatest player, I mean, his name doesn't even come into the conversation. You talk about
nope.
Jordan, you talk about Oscar, you know, you say maybe his name doesn't even come in the, you say Russell, you say Chamberlain, you say Oscar, you say Jordan. His name never comes into the conversation. And that's just mind boggling. You know, as Miami Boyce would say, that's remarkable to me. Remarkable to me that when you talk about the greatest, the guy played 20 years, had a shot that was unstoppable, all-time leading scorer, 5-time MVP, 5 world championships, won it with Milwaukee, and won it with the Lakers. Was the guy that was part of the Cavaliers Oscar for the first team to ever win 60 games 2-3 years in a row, and you never mention the Jabbar's name when you talk about the greatest player that ever played the game. And Chamberlain Russell, he was a better offensive player than Russell, and a better free throw shooter than the Dipper. It's just simply amazing. I mean, because when it got to a certain stage of Dipper's career, Dipper couldn't shoot that fall away. I mean, Kareem had that sky hook forever. I mean, okay.
And also could dribble the ball down the court, and he could bring it up. he could bring the ball up like a guard too. You can bring it up too.
The second most unstoppable shot probably in basketball history, behind the dunk.
What was the first most unstoppable shot?
He played on the game and the team that broke the Lakers' 33 game winning streak.
Jabbar. Well, him and Oscar. But now you said his shot is the second most unstoppable. What was the first unstoppable?
Well, I said probably the second one because the dunk would have had to be the first one.
Great line, Stanley. Doc Stanley, Sports and Dip, Block Talk Radio on the Tucson Guard. But now we're about to close out here. It is Mike on Lights Off. The first portion of Sports and Dip was brought to you by Beauty and Barber Shop, Andreas, 27B. East 175th Street in the Bronx, and the second portion of Sports in Depth, the Mic On, Lights Off, by none other than the Crystal Heart Show, which comes on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. weekly, and your time with a Cable 56, RC and Channel 83, and Verizon 34 tomorrow. For those of you who are Brooklynites on Brick Cable, I will be on air with Michael Bellamy, the first ever African-American quarterback in the history of Staten Island High School football, and the number one sportscaster in Brick television history, and the author of the greatest radio show in the history of boxing, the Bellamy Boxing Report. Miami Boykin, Miami B. Boykin, Blackfoot Dejan, and the brother had the greatest show in the history of cable television, the iconic Boykin on Boxing. Gentlemen, the entry that we had last week, gruesome, heartbreaking. I believe. Are they going to make some changes in international basketball rules now?
No, I don't think so. No.
All right. Well, are they listening to the court or something? I thought there was going to be some adjustments there, Joni.
Oh, no? You talking about with the NBA? You're pushing that thing back a little bit where this boy got hurt? Yes, they're going to do that. Push it back a little bit. That's about it, what I know. Yeah.
But my question, I mean, the Pacers are done for all intents and purposes, so now they're probably winning the championship.
They forget it. We ain't going to talk about them.
Okay, can he come back from the injury? And you started the hoop, so we'll go with Jonesy after that. Can he come back from the history, from that injury?
Yeah, it's going to take – yeah, he can come back. It's going to take some time, though. That's going to take some time. Right,
well,
almost take,
he,
almost
what
2 years for that.
Time?
Almost – yeah.
Huh?
It's going to take some time.
Well, how much time are you looking at, Jump Shot?
I think he's going to be out a year. I believe he's not going to come back. He won't be back this season.
Shot.
I mean, he's a young person. I mean, Paul George is about, what, 26? So he's a young person. He'll heal. He'll be back. Now, when he comes back, you know, what kind of player will he be? Of course, that remains to be seen. But he'll be back.
Now, Jonesy, why he cannot come back with the same skills and ability that he's leaving with?
Of course he can.
Mm-hmm.
Of course he can.
Yeah, he can. But it's gonna take some. He gotta get his timing back. He gotta get his timing back and everything. He's playing his feet, playing his defense. It's gonna take some time.
But once again, the fact that you mentioned Jonesy, being a young player, all these things are advantageous in the recuperation of not only his body, but in once again coming back to the same skill level he left the game. Correct?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. Very much so.
Mm.
But we also remember, the league is not standing pat either. I mean, these young guys coming into the league now, the Wiggins, the Jabari Parkers, you know,
yeah.
They're coming in now, they're hungry, and they're trying to establish themselves and their name in this league. And so there's always going to be this influx, not only from the college ranks, but from the international ranks of young players coming in trying to make their mark.
Okay, gentlemen, the Spurs have won the NBA championship. The Miami Heat now is no longer the powerhouse it used to be. Can the Spurs repeat? Now, they signed Parker to an extension. Duncan's coming back. Ginobili's coming back. The young player that was the difference in the won the MVP is coming back. They stay healthy. One,
oh, yeah.
Can we look at them back in the finals? And number two,
Oh yeah.
Can they win it again?
Definitely. Oh yeah, definitely. They got I think they got a shot at doing it again. Yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. I picked them before. Everybody laughed. I still stick with them. So somebody knock them off the throne. Yep.
Jump
still
shot?
Sticking with them.
I don't know. The Clippers. I want to say the Clippers, but I don't know. I mean, Doc Rivers. I think now with all this stuff behind them, with the sale of this team, and. You know, another year under Doc Rivers and Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Jamal Crawford. You know, I want to say L.A., but there's something going. You know, I think losing Darren Collison as a backup to Chris Paul could be a factor.
Went to the Sacramento Kings. I couldn't believe that. It was crazy.
Somebody
was crazy.
I got it.
Hey Jonesy, did you hear Hoops just said he went to the Sacramento Kings? Hoops, you said what's wrong? Hoops, why couldn't you make the business up? Well, why couldn't you believe that, Hoops?
That goes to show you, money, you gotta go where the money is. So he got paid more. So they're gonna miss him. The Clippers gonna miss him too. The backup Paul, that's gonna hurt. It's gonna really hurt them. A lot of changes. And I'm gonna tell you too. There's a lot of guys in uniforms. You're gonna need a program now. A lot of changes.
Yeah.
A lot of changes now.
Gentlemen, here's another question. We know that whole Golden State thing was out of line. I think it's starting with you, Jump Shot. It's inevitable that Mark Jackson will eventually come back and be on the coaching lines.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he'll be back, but I mean, it just goes to show you, you know, two steps forward and six steps backwards. I mean, there's no way, in my estimation, this is a guy who let each year his team got better. The players loved him. The community loved him. He was doing a fantastic job, and that's not enough to keep to. You're talking about losing a job. They should have been offering him an extension at the beginning of the year. They didn't do that.
You know why that happened?
He's one of five African-American coaches that did not get brought back. I mean, at least you can say in Utah, Tyrone Corbin did get a shot. So that one, know, along Baltimore. How does Lionel Hollins not allowed to go back? Now, rip for us in Brooklyn, but he's not allowed to come back after taking the team to the conference finals the year before. Wayne Casey doesn't get consideration for coach of the year. You know, so 2 steps forward, 6 steps back.
Yeah, well, that was management. That was management. Mark and it was all about him and Jerry West not getting along in the front office. He kept them after practice and everything. That's what that was all about. He wanted to control the practice. They tried to tell him what to do in practice.
Here's the other question, then. Here's the other question, because I didn't know what all this hurrah was over Steve Kerr. But here's the other question,
man,
then. With Jackson's availability, shouldn't he have been a man actually at the top of the list, but he should have been somewhere on the list for the Knicks job with Phil Jackson, Hoopsta?
Who's that, Steve Kerr? No.
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 Mark Jackson. No.
Oh, Mark Jackson, definitely. He should have talked to Mark Jackson, but like you said, five on the right hand side. You know how that is. That's how it is. So he should have been off it. He should at least talk to him. At least that. They didn't even do that. They didn't even give him a phone call. I didn't understand that at all. It was unbelievable. Well, but Derek Fisher's a good pick, so we'll see what happened with Derek. So at least we got a black coach. We'll see what happened.
See, my problem with that is because you gave it to another black guy, it doesn't seem like you slighted the other black guy, and that is not any sort of racial underlining. I tell this story of when Rick Henderson won the MVP award, they talked about what a great year Cecil Fielder had, and maybe could have went either way. As if like Ricky wasn't supposed to win it, he did the next year when Cecil had the same kind of year. They gave it to Cal Ripken, whose team was nowhere near the running. I mean, Ricky was in for the batting title. His team won the division. And here's Kerr, a guy who hadn't coached at Biddy Wee League, and yet he was in the running for the Knicks job, won it with the Golden State job. Here's Mark Jackson, who's lost in the purposes, should have been coach of the year. And it just as other things change, they remain the same. Sports and Depth, Blog Talk Radio, and the Trust and Guard Radio Network. It's Mike on Lights Up. It's the Hoopster. Louis Hoopsa Hart and Greg Jumpshot Jonesy Jones Senior here. We're getting ready to close out and leave you with three thoughts, latest news to you. Roy McIlroy won the PGA Championship. Derek Jeter became the all-time hit king for a shortstop, and already is the number one right-handed batter in the history of the American League with the most hits. The names in front of them, they are really, really kind of special. Pete Rose, number one. Ty Cobb, number two. Number three, Cameron Hankam, averaged 33 home runs and 100 RBIs a year. Stanley Frank Musial, number six for the St. Louis Cardinals. 1 year, for the lack of one home run, Musial would have won the Triple Crown, but he led the league and Major League Baseball, and I got to get that story for you. Single, double, triple. I'm going to come back there for a minute to get that information for you.
Hey,
speaker.
Right.
Yeah.
One more thing. 30 years ago on the Mets, Dwight Gooden became the Rookie of the Year on the New York Mets in 1984, 30 years
ago. Wow. You know, I say, you know, life is short and time moves quickly. And 30 years ago, talk to Doc.
And also, Doc, the losing season of the Yankees with Buck Showalter, your man. Remember that year?
Well, that's
that year.
They didn't lose. They got jammed up in that whole strike thing. And Buck got fired after leading them to the division title. Buck Showalter, one of the great managers, one of the best managers in baseball. Good buddy of mine.
Yeah, that was something else. That a big thing on them the other day.
30 years ago, Doc was 17-9, his rookie year, led the league in strikeouts, and then came back the next year with a 24-4 mark, won the Triple Crown, the youngest pitcher ever to win baseball's Triple Crown, wins, strikeouts, and ERA, and yes, by the grace of God, because all great and wonderful things come from him. In the Doc Stanley Trust and Guard Sports and Depth Entertainment Museum, we have two pair of Doc Gooden game-used strikes. We have a special case of a Doc Gooden glove and cap. And we also have, and Doc, you know, he kept winning the Silver Slug Award for pitchers. We have some Doc Gooden autographed batting gloves. And let's listen to a little music. Gentlemen, hold tight. We get ready to roll. Don't anybody move. Information on Stan Musial gives it to you as he had a year that was quite remarkable. 1948. In 1948, only one home run prevented Carlos Glover, Stan Musial, from leading every major hitting category and becoming the first to sweep departmental honors since James O'Neill of 1887 of the St. Louis Browns. Musial led the majors in batting average, hit doubles, triples, total bases, on-base percentage, and slugging percentage, and led the National League in runs scored and RBIs. In the modern era, baseball triple crown has been achieved 14 times, but nobody has come as close to Musial, who never won a triple crown, and leading every hitting category. Musial also never led the National League in home runs in his 22-year career, finished second that year with 39, one behind leaders Johnny Mize and the Giants and Ralph Kiner of the Pirates. He would have tied them for the lead had a rainout not taken away a homer. Musial played 153 games that season and hit safely in 121, including 68 multiple-hit games. He finished the season with 103 extra base hits, a total not reached again until 1996 by Cleveland's Albert Bell. Musial's 702 slugging percentage is still the highest total for a left-handed batter. He also tied Ty Cobb's record with 4 5-hit games, including one on September 22nd, when he played with two hurdles with and got 5 hits by swinging only the first 5 pitches. Musial entered the season feeling he had something to prove. The entire 1947 season with an inflamed appendix, by his standards, batted a disappointing 312. Stanley Frank Musial, a great man. Guy got a chance to meet personally. And in fact, they have autographed party of small bat in his assistant, me and him, sitting with former Governor Hugh Carey. Stanley Frank Musial, number 6, greatest Cardinal player of all time. Not Stanley, watching that Blog Talk Radio on the Tustin Guard Radio Network. It's been Jump Shot, and it's been the Hoopster. We're getting ready to run on out of here and leave you with 3 thoughts. So Larry's going to give you that last thought. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others. Did you pick up your space here on Earth? That Muhammad Ali's quote. One before is Dr. King. And King also said something else that was quite profound. It's not the voices of your enemies that you remember. It's the silence of your friends. Remember, gang, life is short and moves quickly. We thank you so much for being on Sports Network. This Sports is Sports Network. I call myself the most combined and Crystal Hart Show. New York City's number one in prettiest female sportscaster. Who's on? I want a corner. Channel 56, RC and Channel 83, and Verizon 34. Tomorrow, the doctor, I'll be with Michael Melny on Brick Sports. Check us out. And Larry Hart, you will close us out. So with that, I'm going to buy my heart. God bless you all. And trust in God, the host. And Jump Shot. On my behalf, say thanks for being with us, Sports and Death. And we'll be coming with you again next weekend. Right again. We'll travel, be back another live game. We have the Jets and the Giants play the annual preseason game together. And now it's time for Larry Hardesty to tell us good night. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death, Blog Talk Radio, with the Trust in God Radio Network. And we'll be here next week. with the sports wrap-up. Fox Daily, Sports and Death, Blog Talk Radio, on the Fussing Guard Radio. Hoopster, Jonesy, thanks a lot, my brothers, and be talking to you soon.
From ESPN New York 98.7 FM. Did you enjoy the show? It was outstanding, but I expect that from the legendary Doc Stanley. Nothing less than the best. As he always says to me, and it's my favorite saying from him, live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Words to live by. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great night, and we'll see you next time on Sports in Depth with the legendary Doc Stanley.
Jumpshot Jonesy's theme. Jumpshot, we'll be talking to you during the week. Thanks for being with us one more time, everybody at the Sports and Depth. Remember now, if you want to call in, 646-200-0373, 646-200-0373, 646-200-0373, Doc Stanley and the Posse. And remember, right here, we rope the rumors, hog tie the issues, and brand the truth. Doc Stanley and Posse, Sports and Depth, Blog Talk Radio, on the Trust in God Radio Network. Thanks for being with us. And we're going to, as you know, today is Father's Day in Brazil, and in dedication to the great fathers all over the world, I'm going to play one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite groups, the Shy Lights, and their great song that I remember from way, way back, and Let Me Be the Man My Daddy Was. And with that, we're going to leave. Ladies and gentlemen, the Shy Lights. And we once again want to salute all the dads in Brazil. We picked out Chiquinho, Ricardo, Décio, Geraldo, Ivo. I'm missing another name. They said, oh, and Justino. And all the other fathers, and hey, sometimes there's some ladies who play the father or the dad, so we're doing that for you too. And now, we're going to close the show with a song dedicated to all the great fathers in the world, my late dad, dedicated to the great fathers on the show, like Jumpshot Jimsy, and also none other than Cincinnati Sea Wings, Harold Weston Jr., the Shy Lights, close out Sports in Depth with their great song, Let Me Be the Man My Daddy Was. And we praise and honor to the Father of Fathers, Father God. Thanks for being with us. Shy Lights, you got the floor. Yes, the Father be the amigos and familiar and fiala in Brazil.
Than every star in the sky, with that look of forgiveness that's always in his eyes. He worked so hard, so gentle as a lamb. He gave up so much to make me just what I am. No!
I'll always how. I'm not a child, but my heart still can dream. So here's my lifelong wish, my grown-up Christmas list. Not for myself, would always win, and love would never.